are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Thorium is a little-known form of nuclear energy that is both safe and 200 times more efficient than the current nuclear technology. The United States had a working experimental thorium reactor at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory in the late 1960s. However, its funding was cut by then-President Nixon for reasons unknown. But it is suspected that the reason was thorium reactors do not produce weapons-grade nuclear byproducts and would likely put the oil and gas and coal industries out of business. Thorium is so energy dense, it could replace all forms of energy currently used on Earth today for a tiny fraction of the cost. A mere 5,000 tons of thorium would power the entire world for a year, replacing 65,000 tons of uranium, 5 billion tons of coal, 31 billion barrels of oil, and 5 trillion cubic meters of natural gas. With the cheap electricity that would be produced by thorium, we could even replace gasoline and diesel fuels by producing carbon-neutral, pollution-free fuels such as dimethyl ether, hydrogen, and methanol. Thorium could even be used to clean up our nuclear waste stockpiles by extracting the remaining amount of energy that was not spent in the uranium. 99.5% of it was wasted. So while uranium is extremely rare like gold and platinum, thorium is as abundant as lead and is a byproduct of rare earth mining. A single rare earth mine could provide all the world's energy needs. Just a single mine. And thorium reactors cannot have a meltdown. They are safe. They use a passive safety system. A refrigerated soft plug keeps the reactor running. If power is lost for any reason, the refrigeration stops and the plug automatically melts, and that drains the reactor into a safe cooling tank. There are no worries that diesel generators will fail due to flooding like what happened at Fukushima Daiichi. If power is lost to the reactor, the thorium reactor will just shut itself down passively without any human intervention. And it is even technically possible to use a subcritical reactor that is excited by lasers or miniature particle accelerators. This would make the thorium reactor 100% safe, meaning it could be used to directly power cars and even your home independently of the power companies. If power is lost, the laser or particle accelerators turn off and the nuclear reaction completely stops. So the question is, why is this technology being withheld from the world? I urge you to contact your representatives and ask them why thorium power is not on the forefront of our energy policy here in the United States and in other parts of the world. Because the energy potential of thorium is so staggering that it would literally change the face of the world. It would benefit mankind like no form of energy has ever done before. And the jobs lost in the oil, gas, and coal industries would be rapidly replaced by more productive jobs powered by this cheap and abundant energy source. Energy creates jobs. The cheap energy creates even more jobs. It would power agriculture. It would even enable local agriculture, such as hydroponics, aquaponics, which would produce food right in the cities. That would bring the cost of food down, especially in third world countries that can't afford a transportation system powered by diesel fuel running trucks for hundreds of miles. It would mean water purification. It would mean abundant water for third world poor countries. We could actually desalinate ocean water with this cheap, abundant electricity and pump it inland, meaning places with little or no water would now have abundant, clean water. This would mean population stabilization in third world countries, because first world countries have stable populations. Third world countries do not. The implications of a thorium-powered world are staggering. It would bring industry.
This is a tale of two very different cities, two remarkable men, and two similar but different inventions that could revolutionize car engines.
What has the French Riviera got in common with Melbourne? They both host Grand Prix, of course, but they also both have companies developing a new kind of engine that runs on pure air. Now, power tools, of course, have run on air power for decades, but no one's been able to turn that technology to cars. Well, there's a French company here in Nice that's done it. Maybe the air car revolution is about to happen.
The cost of feeding the average family's car with fuel is about $60 per week and rising. For a hybrid, the average is about half that. But imagine this, a whole week of driving for only a few dollars. Welcome to the place that could make it all happen. This is the factory of MDI, Motor Development International. It's run by inventor Guy Negro. 15 years ago, this French engineer was designing state-of-the-art Formula One engines. Today, he's leading the race to design the world's first commercial air-driven car. His factory is experimenting with vans, taxis and people movers that could one day go non-stop for an incredible 4,500 kilometres on just one tank of fuel.
Guy Negro's been working on this air car for 10 years. These are just some of the prototypes. I want to say air, it runs on compressed air, of course. The compressed air pushes the pistons in the engine up and down rather than tiny explosions of petrol, like in a conventional engine. But doing that with air is a real challenge. But the reward is you end up with a car whose only emission from the exhaust pipe is clean, breathable air. Of course, the real ingenuity is under here, the engine. Now, it's a four-cylinder piston engine, just like a regular car, but there are significant differences. For a start, that engine weighs less than half of a regular engine. That's because a lot of the components are made of aluminium. Now, the reason they can do that is because there's no combustion. This is driven by air pressure. In fact, you can hold your hand on that engine when it's running and it would just feel warm. So it's well below the melting temperature of aluminium, which means that something like 80% of this engine is made from that lightweight material. So instead of those tiny hot explosions of petrol and oxygen pushing the pistons up and down, like in a normal internal combustion engine, the air engine has compressed air doing the job instead. This is what the air car looks like underneath the seats. There are three compressed air cylinders, cutaway models of them here. Now, the pressure in these things is 300 bar. That's 150 times the pressure you'd pump your car tyres to. So very high pressure environment. And that's why they're made of carbon fibre. If they made these of metal, if you had a car accident, they could explode and send shrapnel everywhere. Whereas the carbon fibre just splits. Now, the chassis itself is made of aluminium. The key to an air car is to keep everything lightweight so you get the best possible mileage. Good to go. Clutch out. Hey, it's working. Push button gears for now, but the final version will be automatic.
Now, keep in mind this is just a prototype, so it feels and drives pretty much like a normal car. Now, when they finally go to market with these cars, they say they'll have a top speed of about 110 kilometres an hour, and you should get about 200 kilometres out of the tanks in the back before you have to refill, which, given it's for city driving, it's pretty good, I'd say.
The car can be refilled from a compressed air service station in just 3 minutes. Or plug it into a PowerPoint at home, and the onboard compressor will do the job in 4 hours, for about $2 worth of electricity.
For country driving, they plan to use a hybrid engine, so there'll be petrol or even some biofuel that will help the air. So they should get a much faster car and also one that'll get a lot further.
The hybrid engine would use a small amount of petrol to compress air as you go. And on just one tank of petrol, you could get from Brisbane to Perth or from Los Angeles to New York. How's that for fuel economy? MDI plan to have their first cars on sale in Europe by next year. Engines will be available in 2, 4 and 6 cylinders, with car prices starting from less than $15,000. Later in the show, the Melbourne, Australia part of the story. The backyard inventor with his own air engine, and it's a little beauty. Earlier in the show, we showed you how one man's passion for air could save us a fortune at the petrol pump. Well, 16,000 kilometres away, a very different air engine revolution is taking place.
I'm at the wholesale fruit and veggie market in Melbourne. 6 o'clock in the morning, and as you can see, it's total chaos here. Not the sort of place you'd expect to see the demonstration of a brand new technology. Yet, that's exactly what we're about to witness.
The markets are noisy and pretty polluted, thanks to all those petrol and gas-powered trolleys and forklifts. Engineer and inventor Angelo Di Pietro is hoping to put a stop to all that, using his own air engine-powered trolley. The remarkable thing about Angelo's engine is its size. This is the petrol engine that came out of that car, and he replaced it with this. It weighs just 13 kilograms. And the reason that's possible is its ingenious design. Instead of pushing pistons up and down like in a conventional petrol engine and in the French air motor, here, compressed air moves a single rotary piston around to power the central drive shaft. The beauty of the design is that the engine parts hardly touch. A layer of air cushions the rotation of the piston, so there's very little loss of energy to friction, and so very little loss of power. In a normal car,
Much of the engine power output can be lost running the engine itself and things like the gearbox. Angelo's rotary engine will be much more efficient. There's no gearbox, few parts to move, and the engine itself is incredibly light, so much of the power goes straight to the wheels. Its size to power ratio is incredibly good. There's not many car engines that you can hold in your hands. And Angelo has plans for a new engine weighing just 6 kilos, less than half the weight of this one. For 30 years, Angelo has dreamt of creating the perfect air engine. He's got home video evidence that his rotary air motor has got many more applications than just the veggie markets. It works on water, in cars, and is powerful enough to pull heavy loads. Angelo is still refining his engine. When the trolley is ready for the markets, there'll be no more dangerous fumes, and it'll be simple to refill.
To fill up, of course, you don't need petrol, just a bit of compressed air. Takes about 2 or 3 minutes to fill up, and for that you get about 2 hours of driving.
The trolley's already got the thumbs up down at the markets.
So you reckon this is the future?
It's gotta be, mate.
This is the intention. Tesla is gonna help the environment. It's gonna help the health of people, and it's gonna generate many thousands of jobs.
So on different sides of the world, in different ways, two men are doing what was once thought impossible and changing the way we could all live beyond tomorrow.
Slicing through steel in a matter of seconds.
I thought, this can't be true. I said, this is going to be big. What first thought in my mind, this is going to be big.
100% environmentally safe.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting to have created this very unique gas. It's very evolutionary. I think it'll change the world in our own small way, which will get bigger. We'll change the world. It'll make it a better place, that's for sure.
Producing results that have never been seen before.
I mean, how can you not love it? It's 3 times as fast. It's so much cleaner. Once you get accustomed to it, nothing else will ever be good enough.
Sound like science fiction? It's not. It's here. It's now. It's HHO gas. And it's evolutionary. Yet the source of HHO's energy has been here since the dawn of time. In fact, it's one of the most common substances in the universe. Water. For centuries, man has tried to harness the power of water. And as early as the 19th century, scientists narrowed their focus to the two comprising elements of water, hydrogen and oxygen. They knew that these two individual gases could be produced from water, but found it was very expensive to do so, requiring tremendous amounts of electricity. In addition, the resulting quantities of hydrogen and oxygen were small and extremely dangerous if not handled properly. As a result, many believed for decades that there was little to no commercial future for water as an alternative fuel source. But then came the dawn of a new millennium, and with it, the birth of not two, but one unique new gas, HHO. By expanding on older research and using a more sophisticated approach, inventor Denny Klein developed a new process and machine that would finally achieve what was once thought impossible.
The H2O2000 machine is very user-friendly. Basically, you just need electricity and water. And from that water, we make a very unique gas called HHO gas. The gas is made on demand without any high-pressure tanks, which is a big safety factor in the industrial arena.
Indeed, when compared to other more traditional gases like oxyacetylene, HHO Gas and its H2O 2000 generator is much safer, easier, and less expensive to operate. In fact, HHO has no toxic fumes, no ultraviolet radiation, no dark soot. It's odorless, colorless, and 30% faster.
I've been welding steam fitter plumbing for 26 years. My granddad has been doing it for 55 years now. We've seen this machine, both of us, we're just blown away by the applications, and we're burning water. It just blew us both away.
For workers in the welding industry, HHO being generated on demand and on site by the H2O 2000 can mean a savings of $20 an hour in gas costs alone.
Here we've got a hot water piping installation. 26 years ago when I came into the trade, the norm was using propane or acetylene gas. The carbon soot coming off of the fossil fuel gas would blacken the walls, and nobody wants to repaint their walls. Here today we've come in with the HHO gas. It's cleaner, more efficient, and it increases our productivity with less heat stress on the members. And we go in and do it in half the time. Acetylene, you're usually running about a minute per joint. HHO gas, they've timed me, and I've got it down to 12 to 15 seconds. Thousands of joints per job, you're increasing your productivity twofold.
When in a side-by-side comparison, it is easy to see how much faster HHO gas can be. Finishing this copper joint in just 14 seconds, HHO leaves oxyacetylene behind in record time.
We go in, the contractor's making money, the homeowner's saving money, and we're making money because we're working.
HHO's flame itself is only 259 to 279 degrees Fahrenheit, but reacts quickly with whatever it is applied to.
Our temperature's 259 degrees. We can instantaneously start cutting the steel right away. So we went from 259 to 1400 degrees. This is refractory brick. We can literally burn a hole right down through the center of that brick, so we jump to 4500 degrees. We can go from 4,500 up to over 10,000 degrees. We can totally subliminate tungsten. That's at 10,000 degrees. Very concentrated flame, doesn't burn my fingers. In robotics, we can heat up a part. We can do it with one gas. We can heat the part up very, very quickly. As you can see, it's cherry red, and the whole part is consistently cherry red. This is a barbecue grill briquette. Again, we can get that cherry red in just a matter of seconds, instantaneously, when our gas hits it. Normally, that would take 3 to 5 times longer, and they would never get the BTUs that you get using our gas. This is a piece of ceramic. Again, in the future, an anode, as you can see, instantaneously, we can get thousands of degrees of temperature. We've gone over 13,000 in the laboratory. For the Navy, we've also done another project where we cut lead. And again, we can instantaneously cut lead like a piece of butter. The nice part about it, we start out with water. Once the gas is combusted, it'll turn right back to water.
Pure and clean water, making HHO gas 100% safe for those who use it and for the environment.
Safety was one of the major reasons that I was so attracted to this system, because for a long time we've taught the oxyacetylene system as a normal part of machine tool technology. And I literally was frightened for the young people, because acetylene is such a volatile and explosive and unstable gas to use.
Donald Wan is an instructor at the Fulton County Area Vocational School in Kentucky. He has found HHO and the H2O 2000 safety features to be a tremendous asset when working with high school students.
You probably need to reduce your RPMs just a little bit. Very good.
Our main focus here at the Fulton County Area Technology Center is preparing young people for life. We teach high school aged young people, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, oftentimes are just beginning to seek what direction they're going to go for their workaday world or to further their education. Here in my classroom, I teach machine tool technology, and we have a pretty full spectrum machine shop, all aspects of it, the computerized, the digital, the general machine, and of course a big part of that is the welding part, and that is where HHO technology has fit so well with my class. Just the safety features was such a wonderful aspect of it that it is not explosive as acetylene is. It puts out no ultraviolet light, so it can't be damaging to their eyes. There's not many ways that you can maladjust this machine, and so they can't get too much pressure on one side or the other, and every aspect of it is a positive.
Myself, going into mechanical engineering, I would rather work with HHO than acetylene, because acetylene is primitive. Acetylene is hazardous, toxic to breathe, explodes easier, costs more to run. After I get out of engineering school, hopefully design, build, use HHO on some of my work.
HHO technology replacing the oxyacetylene system.
The future of the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station is in doubt tonight. It was shut down when one of thousands of cooling pipes sprung a leak on January 31st. At least 1,300 of its cooling tubes are displaying unusual wear. The problem underlines the nagging issues with current nuclear power plants, which operate at tremendous pressures and very high temperatures. We need the energy. Unfortunately, solar and wind power have proven inadequate so far.
But there may be a new solution to our energy needs that all sides can embrace.
And in this special report tonight, John Coleman shows us what it is. John?
Sandra and Alan, our highly technological world, and yet solutions don't come from the politicians, but more often from the scientist. So here is a scientific solution that seems to be finding some favor with both the anti-fossil fuel environmentalist and those who want cheap, unlimited power to keep our civilized society rolling onward. In one word, the answer seems to be thorium.
Thorium will power the world. That's our new bumper sticker.
John Kutch is devoting his life to promoting thorium as the energy source of the future.
Man, you could save the world with this stuff. It's unbelievable.
Thorium. It can produce about 90 times as much energy as uranium and leaves a fraction of the waste. And that waste cannot be used to make bombs. The reactor is considered walk-away safe. But there's no question about it. Thorium power is another form of nuclear power, so at first glance, that probably sounds scary. Thorium, however, is a far different element than uranium, so when you study it, the scare factor fades away. To start with, thorium will not go into an uncontrolled atomic explosion, no matter what. So the ultimate threat of a uranium fuel plant is immediately eliminated. No chance of that mushroom cloud in Armageddon. Second, thorium nuclear plants will operate at standard air pressure. Now, this is a major difference from the uranium reactors that are around today. They're essentially mammoth high-pressure cookers, and it's that huge pressure that leads to the leaks and the risk of that hard-to-control radiation leak. Building a thorium reactor that operates at standard air pressure greatly reduces the cost of building and operating a thorium-powered nuclear plant. And should a leak occur, radiation won't blast into the atmosphere. The plant will simply shut down. Third, thorium nuclear plants don't use power rods, with all the problems of how to handle them and remove and transport and store them when they're spent. Instead, the thorium is used in a liquid state, held in a bathtub-like container. A well-built containment tank underneath it is there just in case there is a problem. You simply open the drain and the thorium swirls harmlessly away into the drain tank. Fourth, thorium, unlike uranium, is an abundant element. There are deposits of it in most countries. It's cheap. It's easy to mine and refine. The United States has 14% of the world's supply. It's mostly out there in the desert.
I think we have a really difficult time
defining, you know, what's green and what's not green. But I've decided that for myself, the most important, the dominant issue, the thing that could wreck every ecosystem on the planet is climate change, and so therefore that's what I'm going to focus on. So for me, nuclear power is a green power source.
Alexis Madrigal has studied the issue and written a book encouraging his green friends to accept thorium. He sees it as a way to replace coal and other fossil fuel power electric generators, and it can be done. Believe it or not, the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission built a thorium-powered nuclear plant at Asheville, Tennessee, way back in the 1960s.
So far, the molten salt reactor experiment has operated successfully and has earned a reputation for reliability. I think that someday the world will have commercial power reactors of both the uranium-plutonium and the thorium-uranium fuel cycle types.
That scene was in 1968. That reactor, however, was shut down. Why? Political reasons. The military-industrial complex, with its emphasis on nuclear bombs, was totally committed to what is known as the light water reactor. That's what the current plant at San Onofre and all of the rest of the U.S. plants are. But in India and China, they're working to get their first molten salt thorium reactors online.
If an earthquake and a 747 and a tidal wave hit it all at once and the chamber tipped over, what would happen? The fluid would flow into this hot cell, down this pool, and into this storage tank.
John Koch and his alliance of engineers and physicists, and yes, environmentalists, is growing. They will be holding a national meeting again next week. He speculates what it would be like if the thorium reactor had not been shut down back in the 60s by the politicians.
Our fossil fuel usage would be diminishing every year.
You wouldn't have nuclear waste issues like we're facing today. Fukushima wouldn't have happened. 3 Mile Island wouldn't have happened.
We would be producing continually less and less carbon dioxide emitted to the atmosphere per year. Oil consumption would be on the decline. Environmental quality would be on the rise. We would be in a very different situation.
The great tragedy is it could have happened, you know, a third of a century ago.
Don't want to wait any longer for that future.
When and if it finally happens, well, the result will be very cheap if it does. Cheap, plentiful, dependable electric power. But so far, all we have are bumper stickers and a growing army of scientists and geeks and policy wonks who are campaigning to get the politicians to climb aboard. Sandra and Alan?
Interesting. I'd never heard of thorium before.
No, I haven't either. This is a first. I learned something new. Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, don't learn electrical safety by accident and give me the number for 911. Hello, everybody. You're listening to Shaziz Mad Science on www.shazizradio.com. If you want to, what you doing in the background there, Thomas, besides making all that ruckus sound like a bunch of paper and stuff flying around? Doggone it. Anyway.
Sorry about that.
So that's good for live radio. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the chat and the show, jump over there to www.shazizradio. That's got to be a shorter way to say all that. shazizradio.com/superchat.html. In the super chat, you get the option to talk to not just the awake radio side, but the Shaziz radio side, vice versa, whichever people you like to hang out with. You get to hang out with both at the same time. It's kind of cool. So anyway, I posted some links over here. I'm trying to catch my breath. I was like taking a running around trying to get my coffee and everything and get back in here before the electrical safety portion played. All right. Well, I posted some links inside there. There's a video on a Deed's latest Slayer Exciter coils that he put in there. This guy does amazing work. You ought to go over and check out his YouTube channel. And the other one in there, there's one in there about thorium. Actually, a couple of them in there about thorium. There's one in there about an air car, a car that runs off of compressed air. And surprisingly enough, they talk about how on one tank of air, this thing can run for 2 hours. Now, I want to get into that because that's there's something important about that whole running for 2 hours on one tank of air thing. And then we got some stuff down there about HHO and the benefits of using HHO, and they actually got some machines out there that they use instead of oxygen and acetylene. They use basically water to cut metal and stuff. Pretty good deal there. So, rolling on down at the bottom is another video down there, another video about thorium, which was the podcast that I played on there earlier. Okay, now that I caught my breath. Hi, Thomas, how's it going?
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do. Huh? You ever tried to talk whenever you can't breathe? I was running in there trying to make sure I checked everything, even stubbed my
The lung capacity of a person is kind of nature's way of telling you when it's time to shut up.
Oh, yeah, that's the point. So if you can't breathe, then don't talk.
That's right.
Let me take a drink of coffee here.
Problem is, there ain't enough politicians getting... getting pneumonia and bronchitis, and
they didn't get the memo, did they?
No, man. None of them are. They're just. I don't know, man. I'm telling you, man. We just need to get some Peltiers and hook up to the front of those guys and use them as energy generators, man. All the hot air they're putting out.
That sounds like a good plan to me. Now, okay. Now that we talked about Peltier elements, let's also talk about thorium because. It's radioactive, right? Okay, now when you talk about radioactive, now you're going to get people all riled up. But in reality, we use radioactive stuff all the time. And there's a material called americium that is actually in your smoke detectors that releases a little bit of energy. And then there's a receiver on the opposite side of that. That if smoke comes in between that, it actually changes the voltage between the little receiver on the other side and tells the detector that something is not right, and then your siren will go off. So it's used to a constant energy, little bit of flow of energy going through the other deal, and anything that disrupts that will tell you that there's smoke in your house or carbon monoxide. They actually got some for those too, but one of them uses something different than americium. I can't remember what the name of that one is. But either way, with the thorium, it's not a new technology, but the way that they actually designed their reactors to use this as radioactive, basically for heating up water, they're not boiling the water to the steam. They're doing more of a thermal reaction using like a salt mixture with this stuff. And so I was thinking with the Peltier element on a small scale, it'd be a good experiment to try using some of this thorium to see if you could actually generate just a small amount of heat, because all you need on a Peltier element is just a slight temperature difference to get some sort of voltage. Now, how much voltage you get out the other side would be, you know, I guess depending on how much heat you can generate and how hot the thorium would be, you know, mixed with the salt or whatever. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's going to be, it's just a test right now. But these materials out there like thorium, you know, when they take the uranium, they refine that to a super hot radioactive rod. And then they'll drop this down in there to boil the water and stuff, and basically, you know, at a certain point when it's not as efficient as it was when they first put it down in there, they pull it out and it's classified as waste, and they'll put it off in these cooling pools for about 10 years and wait for it to deplete a little bit more, but it's still generating power on the opposite side. Now, one of the things that, from my research of the thorium, is that thorium has the capability, because it does, it's not self-reactive like the other material is. It has to be basically, you have to do something to get it to start to react. Well, the uranium will actually cause the thorium to react. So you could actually draw off the radioactivity from uranium to get the thorium to release its energy, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. So basically, you could take what would be the waste rods, use the thorium to deplete the waste rods even faster than it would have normally been depleted, and at that same point still be able to generate energy off of that. So all the waste that's all over the doggone planet from these spent fuel rods from radioactive basically could be reused. So you ain't got no such thing as trash, if you follow me so far. You still there, Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
So, you got any thoughts on that? I mean, I know that when you talk about radioactivity, people get really concerned about all that, but if you could use this material to generate heat without boiling water to the extent that you could actually overpressurize and then release this pressure out into the atmosphere or whatever, then, you know, like a controlled thermal reaction is what I'm trying to get to.
Right. You know, you're needing to worry about ionizing particles, and most of this stuff that everybody's been talking about, from uranium to plutonium, including the thorium, releases ionizing particles, and what they do when they pass through your cell is if they happen to come into contact with one of the atoms that are in your DNA, they'll knock that atom out of place, and now your DNA is damaged.
All right, well, how's there going to be, there's got to be a method, because they basically run a nuclear reactor. There's got to be a method to protect from that before it ever even gets to that point.
Well, right? Listen, man, protection is kind of a misnomer. You would think that when they say protection, you're talking like a bulletproof vest that just stops bullets, stops all bullets. When they come at you and it hits the vest, it's stopped. And that's not what they mean when they say protection. When they're talking about radiation, they're talking about altering the frequency or the energy potential of the particle, but the particle is still hitting you. So it has less chance of doing damage. You're just lessening your chance of having a cancer cell forming in your body from that.
Well,
you see,
I'm not advocating anybody to rush out there and get any cancer or anything like that. I'm just kind of trying to point out there's all kinds of different technologies out there that just kind of get overlooked.
Well, this is the thing, though. Okay, radiation, and this is a theory, but this is kind of the theory that another friend of mine has been going on, is that radiation is caused by unstable elements. And what they're doing is, by unstable, I mean like, think of a top spinning around that's been knocked off its axis and it's wobbling around now.
Yeah.
And while that atom is wobbling around helter-skelter like that, the background radiation, or the dark matter, or whatever you want to call it, that our universe is made out of, has all these virtual particles that we call them virtual because they're not particles, but they're trying to come into existence, or they're being forced, I guess, by whatever the energy that keeps the universe going, into kind of sort of coming into existence. And there's a balance where most of those, half of them wink back out of existence, and the other half, when they do stick around and decide to become an actual particle, there's a particle somewhere else out in the universe that's winking back out of existence completely. It's being de-energized, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
So it's got this balance constantly going on of these particles, and those unstable elements are basically, because of their wobble, are causing an excessive amount of these virtual particles to stabilize and come into existence that aren't supposed to be there. So you're getting this radiation.
Okay, so with that said...
So this is the thing. Why do we need to use a microscale or a nanoscale or a picoscale particle to do something like this in an instability, meaning the atom? Why can't we use something on a macro scale? Like, something like the oscillators and whatnot that Raymond's working on, you know?
Well, this is what I'm trying to get to with this thorium right there, because, you know, magnetism is basically how we're generating electricity by fluctuating the magnetic field across the deal. Now,
right, which is a larger scale version of that destabilization.
What did you say the half-life was of that material, the thorium? Or did you find out?
The longest one I saw was, and it's apparently a rare, like it has to be manufactured. They have to bombard it like with neutrons or something to turn it into an isotope of, 232, which has like a half-life of 14 billion years.
All right, well...
But the stuff you normally find is ranging between 25 years and 2 minutes.
Okay, well, the thorium that they were talking about, 8 grams of that being able to produce for about 100 years before you'd have to...
Right, which 25-year half-life means that basically the amount of energy that's coming from a gram of that stuff you have is going to be at half potential in 25 years. And then in another 25 years, that whatever you had at that point will now be at half of its original strength.
Okay.
Because the energy from the core is being absorbed by the particles on the outside. So until it's completely exhausted its energy, those other particles can't deplete because they're constantly being refilled with energy.
Okay, now this is where it gets good. All right, so you got a material that, let's say, at the very least would hold energy for 25 years. All right, so there's a 25-year potential power source right there. Now, we talked about briefly on the deal. Imagine if you could put two, you're taking diamagnetic, paramagnetic, what's the other one, doggone it?
No, there's a number of them.
Yeah, there's
which
never.
One are you looking for? Are you looking for the one that turns into a permanent magnet if it's aligned?
Well, the three that we mentioned earlier.
Right. Diamagnetism is a mirror image. Paramagnetism is a mimicking image. And ferromagnetism is a mimicking image. Unless it's overpowered, then it becomes a permanent magnet and it exudes its own magnetic field.
Yeah. And so, basically, what I was talking about, what I kind of briefly mentioned before we had the show live, was that if you could take, let's say, three separate types of magnetic materials and get them to react, ridiculously with each other, you know, they don't like each other. You wouldn't want to put them in the same deal because they'd act erratically, so to speak. Well, all the time while this process is happening, you've got a magnetic fluctuation while nature is attempting to balance itself back out. And so, with the material such as thorium that's constantly releasing a charge, reacting with... Let's just go ahead and use some this spent nuclear rods, some thorium, and some different materials, and have these things in combined with each other, and they're bouncing off of each other. Nature's trying to balance itself out, but everything's chaotic in there. Meanwhile, the magnetic field in that general vicinity keeps fluctuating. You see what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
And so if this was possible, if you could actually put two or three or more materials in general vicinity with each other, and they would continuously, try to level themselves out while that magnetic field was fluctuating, you could take advantage of that by capturing that fluctuation through your electrons inside your copper windings or whatever. So you essentially have a generator that would last at the very least 25 years. Now, does that sound like it's not plausible or what? Because
no, it sounds plausible. It's just We've done that with solar cells, and even though they're not very efficient and don't have a long lifespan, they're better than 25 years. I mean, at 20 years, you're getting, like, for every 100 watts you bought at, when you started out, in 20 years, they'll still be putting out 90 watts. In another 20 years, they'll still be putting out, like, 80, what is it, like, 80, It's not 10 watts. It's basically not 9 watts less. So you're looking at 81 watts.
Okay, so
you know that's 40 years down the road.
That's pretty impressive for a battery. You know, okay. So basically, you showed me a process by which you was actually able to essentially nano coat copper right on top of a piece of metal, and it didn't take but just a brief few seconds, and it was a done deal. You essentially just made a thermal couple, man. Any two dissimilar metals in contact with each other when warmed up would literally produce an electric charge. And so that could be one of the pieces to the puzzle. When you think about how a Peltier element works, you're thinking about the same way that were that thermal couple, because you had mentioned when I said if you heated one side of it and you said you'd cool the other side of it, and then you would get a thermal reaction. And one of the things that any of these radioactive materials are doing is producing heat, you know, because it's radioactive, it's hot, so to speak. And so I think we literally have the potential to build, at the very least, a thermal electric battery that would last for 25 years, at the very least. Well, according to NASA, they've already done it. They sent a probe down to Pluto with a piece of uranium and some thermocouples inside there, and so far away that, you know, the solar panels would be so inefficient that you could only light a 2-watt Christmas light bulb, yet they were able to produce 200 watts of power, run the instruments on the probe, take pictures, and send it all the way back to Earth so that we could actually see a picture of Pluto. All right, so that's not new technology. It's something that's been around for a long time. Now, safety-wise, if you're standing in the general vicinity of something that would be that radioactive, I would say that you'd have to have some precautions going on or whatever. Somehow or another, NASA got this thing put together without killing everybody. Now, did they actually kill people 25 years from now? Or I don't know that yet, because it ain't 25 years from now. But either way, it's still pretty impressive technology, wouldn't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with that said, now I want to get back into touching on the other couple videos. For example, the air car. Now, this guy built this car, and essentially it runs off of compressed air. And they said one tank of air, and I can't remember what the foot-pounds were on the actual pressure on there, but they said one tank of air would run for 2 hours as air car. Now, on the surface, that may not sound that doggone impressive, but if you're actually running a car on compressed air for 2 hours, in my book, that's quite substantial. All right, so now we've talked about thorium, we talked about thermal reactions, and we're also talking about running a car on compressed air. Now let's throw in this HHO deal down there. They're actually using it to, instead of using oxygen acetylene tanks, they're actually using the, HHO to as a torch, which they're getting amazing results, and the waste byproduct is water. And so now you got a car that running on air, you got water that is cutting metal, you got thorium that is actually producing a thermoelectric charge. And what else did I mention in there? Doggone it. the key to remember is this. When you have a generator, your standard generator, and you put it under a load, you have to be able to overcome some torque, because it actually invokes Lenz's law, and it actually produces a second field that you actually have to go over. You have to be able to overcome that torque in order to keep a constant flow of energy out the other side. Well, that takes a lot of power to do that. All right. Now, I ain't never really took a torque wrench or something that would actually, let's say I put a 150-watt light bulb on a generator head, and then I put a torque wrench on there and see how many foot-pounds of pressure it actually takes to keep that generator head turning, then I would know how much torque I had to overcome in order to keep that light bulb on. You follow me so far?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, here's a car that this guy's riding around in, and when I look at the dude, he's got to be at least 100 pounds. I mean, probably more than that. I don't know. He's 100 pounds. He's riding around a car that will go around for 2 hours on compressed air. Now, as far as I can tell, from doing my Electron video, where's the electric motorcycle that I've put together, and it was put together with junk, and I'm just estimating it probably, I ain't never put it on a scale, but it probably weighs at the very least 300 to 400 pounds before I even get on the thing. Alright, and so when I'm on the thing, it's an extra 150 pounds. So if it's, let's say, let's just be conservative and say it's 300 pounds for the bike, it's 150 pounds for me being on there and whatever's in my pocket. So what are we at, about 450 pounds that electric motor has to overcome to be able to, not to mention the friction and the torque or whatever to get the doggone thing started, but just for conservative purposes, 450 pounds I know I at least have that is the torque that will overcome to get me moving. You see what I'm saying so far?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now you got a bike, a motor, electric motorcycle, which everybody's just, oh, well, no, you know, that's not efficient. Okay, well, you got an air car. Oh, well, no, that's not efficient. But what they're overlooking is the actual power that this thing actually has. Now, let's say hypothetically, I'm not on that bike. And let's say hypothetically that bike is raised up in the air. How much longer do you think my batteries would last running that thing? That's a lot of torque. Now, that air motor as well. Now, let's say we take that air motor and we lift it off the ground. It's no longer pulling the weight of the car in itself. It's just spinning the wheels. But it has the capability that if it was on the ground, you could put the weight of the car and a 100-pound man at least on this car, and you could run this thing for 2 hours. So now you have a car that can run on compressed air for 2 hours, that's lifted off the ground, so no longer does it have to pull the amount that it took to move it with somebody on it riding down the road. It's up there. You take that motor, you combine it with my electric motorcycle, and now you have the potential to generate air pressure using the motorcycle that will keep that air motor running continuously and be able to use the torque off of that air motor to put energy back into that motorcycle. So now you got the two systems feeding off of each other. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now in the process of this, you're going to have some waste energy, yet, you know, whether it be from heat from the air being compressed, which you could take off again using Peltier elements, or you could take some of the electricity off of the other side, crack some water into some hydrogen and oxygen and burn that into another unit. You see where I'm going here?
Mm-hmm.
All these combined technologies together, and if you want to add the thermal reaction of the thorium in there as well, if you can find a safe containment system that would work like the NASA probe, now you got an extra 200 watts to add to the equation that you could put back into that system. What do you think?
I don't know. You throw me under the bus again.
Well, think about that efficiency, how much the efficiency of that motorcycle went up in itself just by me getting off of the thing and taking the motorcycle up off the ground, how much longer those batteries would last. We already know it has the power to pull me and that bike down the road. You've seen it on the video. But right. The air car, same concept. All right, it has enough power to pull somebody in that car and the car down the road for 2 hours while, it's under all that load. Now, you take that load away, you reduce that load down to something, let's say a generator head that doesn't require, that much torque in order, if we're talking about 450 pounds, how much torque does it take to move 450 pounds up and down hills and so on and so forth? And that's on my bike portion of it. But it don't take that much torque to actually turn the generator head under a load with a 150 watt light bulb on it. That's just an example. There's no measurements going on in here. I'm just pointing this out. You see what I mean?
Right.
Alright, so what I'm saying is we actually have the capability to, if this just the motorcycle I built alone, if that thing was put into precision work to where it was everything was balanced, everything was made with strong but lighter materials, carbon fiber and stuff like that, you could literally get that motorcycle to literally charge itself while it was driving down the road. You could take and build a compressed air system that would supplement that deal to whenever you was driving down the road, you got at least a 2 hour charging system that would continuously put juice back into that battery as if it was your alternator. You could do this vice versa with the air car and the electric car, the same process. If you've got 2 hours. And that guy that on the one video about the air car said that it only takes about 10 minutes to fill up that tank completely. So if you got a compressor running continuously, electric compressor, then you'll never run out of air in that doggone air car. Vice versa, you won't run out of electricity in an electric car using just those two by themselves in conjunction with one another.
Right.
And we haven't even threw in the thermoelectric portion of it with these two systems. One is you got to have something that's going to produce enough electricity to at least run a compressor. And you see those little air compressors that you can put in the trunk of your car in case your tire gets low. You can plug it into your cigarette lighter and it'll pump the air in there. And those things will raise a half-ton truck off the ground with, airing up the tire. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's got the strength to pump up a half-ton, a tire on a half-ton pickup truck or car, then it has the power to keep that compressor charged up at all times, and all we have to worry about is how much power it actually takes to run that doggone air compressor. And in the process of running that air compressor, those little compressors get hot. You could take that energy off of that wasted energy off the heat of that little bitty compressor and pump it back into something else. So, what I'm trying to point out here is that the technology is not rocket science that we're talking about. And it's not new technology. It's been around forever and a day. It's just putting all these pieces of the puzzle together. You know, a lot of folks, when they go out there and they look at alternative energy, they want to put all their eggs in one basket. You know, they want to... it's all Bedini or nothing. It's all Tesla or nothing. There's a lot of brilliant names out there in energy. And there are uses for there are uses for DC power, and there's uses for AC power. You know, some of the doggone DC motors out there have a massive amount of torque, but yet there are some AC motors out there that have a massive amount of RPMs. Have you ever seen a blender motor out of the deal and watch that thing run? Man, those things scream. It's almost like they're ready to take off. But, you know, if you want a lot of torque, you want a DC motor. If you want a lot of RPMs, you want an AC motor. But I've seen AC motors that can have a lot of torque as well. You see what I mean?
Right.
So, it's fully plausible to literally build an electric generator. See, we've talked about electric cars. Electric cars aren't anything new. They had electric cars before they actually had decent running internal combustion engines. But the car on the road carrying somebody down the road is getting work done. The car up on some center blocks is now a power source, a potential power source to turn a generator. So if you know you got access to all this torque, then you know that you could be able to turn an electric generator. At the very least, we know we can do it for 2 hours. So you'd have a 2-hour generator that runs on compressed air that you don't have to have gasoline to run. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you got a big giant solar bank out there. It has enough power to run an air compressor for 10 minutes. It runs that air compressor for 10 minutes, fills up the tank, which now runs the air motor for 2 hours. That air motor is turning a generator head for 2 hours that is charging up another battery bank that is running an electric motor charging it up, or the electric motorcycle or electric car charging it up for the 2 hours while it's going on. All these things together, and you literally got a self-contained system using solar power to charge up batteries. You're using wind power to charge up batteries. You're using compressed air to step that voltage up to run a big old generator head. They got some generator heads that are amazing. I think my friend, he's got like a 12 kilowatt diesel generator, and so if that doggone thing is powerful enough to run his entire house, then I think that if you could actually run that thing off compressed air for 2 hours as opposed to actually putting diesel fuel into it, wouldn't that be cool?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's
hold on, I'm adding Raymond to the call.
If it's got enough power to actually pull that car down the road, then it's got enough power to turn a generator head under a load. Well, is he in here yet?
I'm here.
How you doing, Raymond?
Hey, good morning.
And I suppose you ain't been listening in, have you?
No. I just got up.
Well, Thomas, can you give him the short rundown, because I can't breathe for a second. I need to.
I haven't followed it because every time you bring something up, once I'm done with my reading, when I come back to listening to what you're saying, you bring something up that I need to go read on too.
Oh.
So
I've all right. Well, let me see.
Digging more deeply into everything you've been saying, we really need to bullet point this stuff, you know?
Alright, here's the bullet points, Raymond. They got a car out there that they designed that runs on compressed air for 2 hours. Alright? One tank of compressed air will run this car for 2 hours. You seen my electric motorcycle out there. And at the very least, that thing weighs at least 300 pounds. And with me on top of it, I'm going to say about 450 pounds. And then it has enough power to move me from one side of my road up to the next and back and such, so it has some torque. So the air motor has some torque, the electric motor has some torque, and so we also talked about thorium. Well, for thermoelectrics, we've talked about HHO. HHO being, you know, basically you're using it for cutting torches instead of oxygen and selling. And so what I'm pointing out here, let's take start off with my electric motorcycle, right? If it weighs 450 pounds with me on it, and that's just being conservative because I never put it on a scale. If it weighs 450 pounds, and let's say it would only last an hour with me on it riding down the road, all right? So what happens if I take myself out of the equation and I raise that bike up off the ground? Now how long would them batteries last?
Lord have mercy.
All right. Now,
all day.
Now, so it's got enough torque to do some work. Now, the air car... I'm estimated probably it weighs probably about 300 pounds as well. That's probably low, but this is hypothetical. Now, the man who's in it, let's just say he's real scrawny and he only weighs 100 pounds. So there's 400 pounds that air compressed car has to be able to move down the road. So let's say you take the man out of the car and you take the car off the road. Now, how long will that 2-hour compressed air work?
Same length of time as
an
electric all day.
All right, so...
Actually, I would say that car is probably going to run less time if you pull it off the ground like that, because you're not putting a resistive load now on that system that's allowing that air to flow out of it. And it's gonna fly top speed, but it's going to basically run down a little faster.
But it still has the torque, right?
Very strong point, because it's going to be more difficult to control the amount of air you put in it.
Right.
You do it, but it's going to be difficult.
All right, now...
Or you can control it.
Now let's say you simulate part of the load back, such as putting a generator head on that compressed air, so now that it's actually happened to do some work, you know, as if the dude's sitting on it. See what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
All right, so now we took that part of that, put it back into the equation. It's actually put that air motor is actually turning a generator head. And like I told Thomas and everybody earlier, I said I've never put a torque wrench, let's say, on a generator head that was connected to a load such as a 150-watt light bulb to see how much torque that I had to overcome. But I'm positive that the weight of a 100-pound man, the torque that it takes to move that weight and that car down the road is more than what that 150-watt light bulb is going to require in order to keep that generator head turning continuously. You follow me so far?
Yep.
So, we took the motorcycle, which was inefficient with me on it, and because of it was made out of junk and it's heavier than heck, and so it's super inefficient. We yanked that thing up off the ground and we put it on a generator head that would simulate a part of the load that would have been if that bike was on the ground with me on it driving down a road. Is this all coming into a view now, what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Now, on the ground, you got 2 hours out of the air car, and let's say you got an hour out of the bike, all right? Now, off the ground, under a portion of the load, there you go. You see what I mean? Stephen Gibbons says, have you factored in the drag coefficient of your hair? She says, Yeah, take my wig out of the way, and now you don't have that drag coefficient of my hair blowing in the wind. That's brilliant. Anon in there said with a turbocharger on it too. I don't remember what he was talking about. I didn't miss that. But that turbocharger isn't to be overlooked as well, because if you ever studied up how a turbocharger actually works, it's working off the exhaust off of an internal combustion engine, and it's sucking air through the other side, which compresses that air and rams it back down into the engine. But in the meantime, there's actually a cooler that cools that compressed air back down enough to where it doesn't damage the engine when it gets inside there. But that turbocharger mixed with the right system there, when you compress air, it gets hot. All right, and that's essentially that exhaust that's coming out of that doggone engine could actually, the exhaust coming out of an air compressor could actually turn a turbine just like that. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I'll tell you something else. I don't know if you factored this in or not. If you use the electric bike to turn the generator, to turn a air compressor, and compress the air in a tank that's full of water, then all of a sudden you got the pipe at the bottom of the tank. It's going to push that water with the same amount of pressure. So if you pumped it up to 100 PSI, but it's a large tank, then you could raise the water in the tank 200 feet and then have it come down pulling the pull, turning another turbine. And now you've got your compressed air to turn an air compressed engine.
Well, see, I like the way you think, man.
You hook it all up over and over and over again in a cycle.
With all this stuff that we've talked about here, these are all like pieces of the puzzle. We know that a generator head will get hot. Not a generator head, but an air compressor head will get hot. I mean, it'll get real hot.
So will the tank. So will the tank. Compressor head with Peltier devices. Cover the tank with Peltier devices. Duh.
How,
you still got compressed air.
How much heat does it actually take to basically boil water into steam?
Oh, it's 840 something BTUs per pound at boiling temperature.
Yeah.
Boiling temperature is determined by the actual pressure on top of it.
Well, so if you had a really super thin tube coiled up around that compressor head that you sent a small quantity at a time of water through that, how soon do you think that air compressor head would heat that water inside there?
Oh, real fast. Yes, real, real fast. I mean, after all, what about these people that make these plunger lighters? You need to hit it with your hand and start a fire. Because you compress the air so hot, it'll actually ignite cotton.
Well, there you go. Now, see, all this stuff that we're talking about together hasn't even gotten into exotic materials and chemistry, such as what Thomas has been talking about working on. All right, now, if we could actually do some of the things, I'm not going to mention, I'll let you tell whatever you want to tell. I'm not going to mention what you're actually working on, but the exotic materials out there, such as bismuth and different coatings, being able to nano coat different materials, this is all technology that's right within our grasp. I mean, it's there. All right. I watched Thomas literally build a thermocouple right there before my very eyes in less than 30 seconds. I mean, it was way less than that. I mean, fraction of seconds. And essentially, he copper coated a piece of metal just right out of the gate. Pow, it's done. Alright, now that gives you the potential to literally create a thermal electric battery, a battery that works off of heat. So let's say you got this battery and normally you got to put some heat to it. Well, we talked about a while back about putting some doggone stuff inside your car during the summertime to solar dehydrator, because it gets hotter than crud inside your car. So there's some solar heat going on there. And there's many different ways to actually get heat, and all you have to have is the same thing you'd have with the equivalence of a Peltier element, a temperature difference, because thermal electrics will break down when it gets too hot. You see what I'm saying? You got to have a balance in there, just like on the thermal pile, or thermocouple, or thermopile. There's so many of them. Peltier element, yeah, that's the word.
Okay, wait a minute. Now, you've already compressed this air. You've pulled the heat from the head of the compressor. You're pulling the heat from the compressed air itself. Now, when you release it, it's ice cold. So you've got to use it to run an air-driven motor. But the exhaust is going to be super, super cold.
Yeah.
So therefore, you use the exhaust of the air compressed motor to I mean, come on, man. It's over and over and over. There is free energy everywhere you look. You're just not using it properly. You can use the same energy over and over and over again.
Yep, and if we have the capabilities of making some exotic materials that will act radically with each other, not, when I say radically, I don't mean, you know, like you put these two together and they blow up or anything like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, if you put, you know, these two magnets in there, that one of a paramagnetic and a diamagnetic, and the other one that Thomas mentioned earlier, and these two just won't sit next to each other peacefully. You know, they're trying to do something, all right?
Right.
You get that down there to where it's actually fluctuating a magnetic field, and in the general vicinity of a coil wire actually generates electron flow, and now you got essentially like a... You remember those little Mexican jumping beans?
Yep.
What were those things?
What makes them work?
Yeah.
They got a little worm in them?
Mm-hmm. So...
when they stop working, the worm dies.
So, if you could figure out a way to make these materials act like that doggone jumping bean... You see where I'm trying to go here?
Yeah.
And
hey,
I believe it's possible for one reason.
Magnetic force field, the flux, is direct. I mean, in other words, it doesn't cut on and off. Where you can take a direct current and run through a transistor and make it turn on and off. Well, is there anything that you could put up against a magnet to block the force? That wouldn't be any resistance.
Well, there are materials such as bismuth that don't necessarily block it out, but can actually have the effect to redirect it to another direction.
There you go.
So, you know,
your coils wouldn't have to move and your magnets wouldn't have to move.
Yeah.
Just to move.
And what's the half-life of a doggone magnet? How long will a magnet hold its magnetic field if it doesn't get too hot or it isn't dropped?
No one's lived long enough to measure that, especially on a natural magnet or neodymium. They claim neodymium is the last 300 years. Some people claim the last 600, but nobody knows because we haven't had them around that long.
So if these things won't attract each other because of the way that they're made and the way that their electrons are aligned or their poles are aligned or whatever, and you put these things in a container where they can't get away from each other and they're bouncing around like popcorn inside there.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You know, they've actually done experiments with neodymium magnets, put north pole to north pole, forced magnets with a vise, force them together, wait 4, 5, 6 years, pull them apart and measure their the loss of energy, and it is measurable, but it's almost unmeasurable. It's so small, the loss of energy. I mean, that's the best way to discharge a magnet is to put a north pole against a north pole and push it together and hold it. I mean, a ceramic magnet will lose its magnetism in a matter of a week or two if you do that.
Well, Thomas showed me an experiment here just a little while back where he actually had a little piece of, I think it was like carbon or something, that floating on top of a magnetic field. What was that? That was graphite or carbon? Thomas, are you there?
You talking to me?
Yeah, what was that experiment?
What I was showing you?
Yeah.
That's graphite that was compressed until it basically formed formed flat sheets, like it reordered the sheets.
How long do you think that thing would have, if it could have been contained in that one little sweet spot, how long do you think that thing could have sat there and hovered?
It'll hover there until the magnet loses its energy. As long as those magnets are magnetized, it'll keep hovering.
All right, the experiments they did, pushing up neodymium magnets together, north to north, south to south, pushing them together and waiting 4 or 5 years, then they measured the loss of energy, and those are the people that came up and said that neodymium should last 300 years, but look at the strain, the resistance they put on that for 300 years.
Yeah.
Hey, right. So it actually, if you don't have that much strain, then the other people that claim that they'll last 600 or 800 years, or even 1,000, they're more correct, because you're not going to get any energy out of it if you just force them together and hold it there. But to actually put it in a generator to generate electricity, duh. 1,000 years.
Well,
the coils don't get hot and destroy the coating on your copper wiring. You got a generator that'll run for 1,000 years.
Using everything in my brain that my brain works mechanically. I see gears turning and things ticking and how things function with everybody. You know, now there's folks out there that can do the same thing with electronics and chemistry and stuff like that. If you could actually get these people together with the people that are good with manufacturing and milling equipment and 3D printing equipment and stuff like that, there ain't no doggone reason why we can't build a generator that is self-contained at all. Man, I don't care. I'll argue till I'm blue in the face with those folks out there that conservation of energy says you got too many losses in this and too many losses in that. I just took away some of the losses by taking that car off the ground.
Yeah. Shaliz, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You're cutting in and out.
It's probably because I was moving in and out of the way from the mic. I get kind of animated up
there. You went dead. Completely dead. There was no sound at all for about 5 seconds. Three times.
No background noise, no nothing.
Well, that stinks. I'm still broadcasting fine.
I just hope it didn't show up in the broadcast that.
No, it's probably just on Skype over there. But either way, I took away those doggone losses when I lifted that bike up off the ground, and I took away the losses when I lifted that car up off the ground. So, all these things used in conjunction with one another have the capability to literally build a self-contained power source that is supplemented by solar power, wind power, thermoelectrics, hydroelectrics, you name it. Even chemistry and radioactivity as well. What do you think?
I know you're right. Totally right.
So the only reason why we ain't doing it is because people don't want to do it.
The only way you can use any kind of energy is you must release it. You have to change its form to usable, and in order to actually use it, you must release it. But the thing is, can you release it into another form and use that?
Sure,
and
you can.
And you release that, use that over and over again.
Sure, you can. We've been doing it way back there since the invention of the steam engine, man.
1 PSI of air pressure will raise water 2 feet. So if you have a 100-gallon tank full of water, and you put a 100 PSI air compressor hooked to it, with the pipe coming out of the bottom, going up in the air, it's going to raise that water 200 feet.
Well, when you throw nature off balance, nature slaps it back down. It's as plain and simple as that. And so,
now if you have 100 gallons of water, 200 feet in the air, which is 800 pounds times 200 feet. So how much energy do you have stored there? And you put it on a series of pulleys and release it and let it pull down, turning a generator. But you've already taken the compressed air. Now all of a sudden you've got the compressed air. It's cold. So it's, when you release it, it's super cold. And you have Peltier devices there. But now you're releasing it through an air-driven motor. Right?
Yep.
So you're using the same energy over and over and over again.
Well, I did a video here recently, and I'm clicking onto my YouTube right now. I did a video called Transformer Fun. And what I've pointed out in this doggone video is that I was able to take and pulse this doggone transformer. When you tap on it, let's say I take my 9-volt battery and I put it to any transformer, it doesn't matter what transformer it is, instantaneously, as soon as I put that power source to it, all the electrons inside there align and it becomes an electromagnet. Alright?
Right.
Well, the instant I pull that thing off, nature's going to rebalance that thing back out, and it does it rapidly. I mean, there ain't no ifs, ands, or buts. There's a lot of pressure being held back there, and the instant I take that out of my, if my fingers are touching that wire, I get the crud shocked out of me. All right, They say you can't get out more energy than you put in. I totally disagree, but I'm not going to argue with them. I'm just going to...
Well, you know, here it is. You can't. You cannot in one situation. Well, you've got to have several situations in line. You know what I'm saying?
Not really, but...
Okay, it's going to take so much energy to pump 100 gallons of air compressed to 100 PSI. Okay? That's going to take so much energy. Well, duh, what are you going to do with it? You're going to use that air pressure to run an air-driven motor. Well, the air-driven motor is not going to put out as much energy as it took to compress that air. However, if you're using the compression of that air to raise that water 200 feet, you now have the compressed air turning an air-driven motor and 800 times 200 foot-pounds of energy producing electricity as well. And you have also produced electricity from the heat of the compressor head, the heat of the compressed air in the container, and now you're making electricity from the cold air coming out of the air-driven motor. I mean, well, come on.
Yes,
you can make more electricity than you use.
If I put my thumb on a 9-volt battery on the positive pole and I put my thumb on the negative pole of the battery, I ain't got no problem. I mean, it's not got enough power, it's not fluctuating, it's not going to hurt. But if I add that coil in there, and I put my thumb on that 9-volt battery with the wire on one side, and then I do it on the other side, and I'm holding it there steady, I'm still not in any jeopardy. But the instant I take my thumb off of there and release that power that's inside that doggone 9-volt battery and that magnetic field that it just created, and it's getting the door slammed shut, I get the crud knocked out of me. All right? So there's a whole lot of pressure coming up out of there real quick. You see what I'm trying to say here, man?
Yes, I do.
So we know all these things. We know how much power you can get out of compressed air. We also know that you can get serious RPMs out of compressed air. Check out them doggone cutting tools with the little what they call it, pneumatic engines on them, all right?
Uh-huh.
The ones you see in shops. Listen to the RPMs on them things when they wind up.
Yeah, I just pulled up a calculator and did the figures. 100 gallons of water weighs roughly 800 pounds. You raise it 200 feet in the air, you now have 160,000 foot-pounds of energy in just the water. But you also have the same amount of foot-pounds of energy in the air compressor tank.
And once you built that pressure up on where that 800 pounds of water is like, 200 feet in the air?
200 feet. One pound of air pressure will push water 2 feet high.
Well, once you release the pressure behind it, how long do you think it's going to take before nature puts it back where nature wants it?
Right.
Well, it's that downward force where we actually get work done. And so, you know, with that said, imagine if you didn't have to put as much pressure behind it to get that water up that high, and you just took and built some condensers up there, and you heated up some water and let the steam fill up the pocket up there, and then once that doggone, that steam condensed back in the water and filled the tank up, and then you pulled the plug on that, pow! You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not that we don't know how to do this stuff. It's just people just, I don't know whether they're either overthinking or underthinking capabilities of stuff. You know, the laws of physics, even if the laws of physics are written in stone, you know what causes them. You know how they work.
Okay, wait a minute. The 160 foot-pounds of energy of the water that you just raised 200 feet in the air computes out to 4.8 horsepower. That means you're going to have another 4.8 horsepower in your tank.
Well, when that water slamming down,
you're going to cool it.
When that water's slamming down that pipe, and the air in between it gets pushed out.
Yep.
So, you know, there you go. There's even some air pressure coming up out of that doggone pipe that you could turn a little turbine with. So For every action is an equal and opposite reaction. I want the water to drop from 200 feet. In the process of it dropping 200 feet, it's going to displace some other atmosphere around it, which is the air. And then that air is going to turn a fan. So,
dude, that water would generate, ideally, 3.6 kilowatts.
Now, if throw in Lord Kelvin generator in there, whereas right. that falling water is actually producing a static charge as it's ramming through the atmosphere down through there.
That's my idea. That's a cool idea.
So,
what about instead of that Lord Kelvin design, you run that water through a pipe that's basically made out of two halves of two similar metals and a small dielectric in between the two where it's been sandwiched together.
Well, there you go, man.
That's a good idea.
Heck, man, just think about that, what you just said. Essentially, you got a doggone thermal, a thermoelectric pipe, because if it's two separate metals sandwiched in each other and you got temperature difference on the other side, it's hot inside the pipe, but it's cold outside the pipe.
I was thinking, though, to collect the energy from that water flowing through it, the electrical energy, the electrostatic energy.
Yeah, and I'm just building to what you said. There are other potentials as well.
Yeah.
So,
well, I like Thomas's idea, because if you do it, just let the water pour down, drop. You know, or not drip, but pour. It'll make electricity as it falls, but then when it gets to the bottom, it's got all that kinetic energy that's built up, and then now it's hitting paddle wheels on a turbine.
Yep.
Right.
So you get electricity twice as it falls.
And we have the capabilities to make a multi material type tubing that you could actually pump water through, you know, and
right.
transfer heat or static electricity at the same exact time. You know, the potentials are limitless. You know, we're only limited by our imagination. We're only limited by what we're willing to try, you know?
Yeah, we're limited by more than imagination. So how much space and how many resources you have is more the limit that we have. We've got the imagination to expand as deep as far as our resources exist, but we don't have the resources to go as far as our imagination can take. We just got to get that set up.
I'm guessing with that comment, I'm saying we as a humanity as a whole, we have everything
right.
we need to do it. It's just
yeah.
individually, we don't have the resources or the funds to actually do what it is we're talking about.
Well, the funds aren't even the important part. Like I said, that's only important to somebody. That's not important whenever it comes to the something. The devices and whatnot you're talking about, they don't care about money. They care about components.
Yeah.
You know, devices, materials. So, you come up with a way to get those, you know, it doesn't matter if it has money involved in it.
I watched a video just yesterday, and this is slightly a different subject, but I'm gonna see if I can pull up a link and post it in the chat room.
I thought you were going to say you're going to run with it.
Well, I'm going to post this in the chat room down there, but it is a simple concept that is just incredibly brilliant. I saw this on Crazy Russian Hacker's channel.
Oh, I like that guy.
Yeah, he cracks me up. He's a pretty good guy. He does a lot of different experiments and stuff, but essentially, he turned a log, just an average log with a paddle bit. He drilled out holes through the log. And then had a hole at the bottom that he drilled sideways through there. And he literally made a rocket stove out of a log. All right, you're going to burn the log anyway. But if you can take that log and turn it into a useful tool while you're burning it, it means you don't have
right.
to burn a whole bunch of firewood in order to cook. All you do is build one of these little rocket stoves out of a log. And when you're done, you don't even have to worry about carrying the stove with you. You use the stove, you burnt the stove up, and now you take the potash that's left over after the log finally burns down, make you some soap out of it or something.
Wow. That's really a cool idea.
But I'm going to... Hopefully this don't start playing, but I'm going to try to do this real quick. Stop the video when because I got to click on the link to get the share link on it. But I'm going to post this video in and take a look at it. And you watch when he blows inside the doggone thing. It turns into a doggone, like a, you know, what do you call those forced air burners? A forge.
No, forge, yeah.
Man, you could probably melt metal inside there because he had a foot and a half flame coming out of the top of that thing, hotter than all get out.
Hey, there ain't no problem with you. That shiz, I've done it.
Yeah. So I'm going to post this link down there in the Shaziz radio chat room over there at the superchat.html. I'm going to post it over on the Wake radio site as well. But, shoot, survival-wise, you want a fire that you could actually cook on top of? Watch the video. He put a couple stones on the top of it, and he put a doggone pan on top of it to boil some water or whatever. But, heck, it was one log. He started it off with a little wood starter kind of deal. I'm sure he could start it with twigs or whatever, you know. But once that thing got to where the actual log itself was burning from the inside, he didn't even have to add fuel to it anymore. The log was the fuel. The stove was the fuel.
Right, right. Like I said, I like that dude. He is one cool dude.
These are the kind of things that I'm talking about. You know, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where's it go? All right, now, we know that. So he just took a log, just a log and a spade bit, drilled a couple holes, made a cook stove out of it. Once the dang log's done, you still got usable materials.
Right.
And I'm almost willing to bet, as hot as that thing, if you put an air, like a little blower motor in front of that thing, I'm almost willing to bet you could melt metal in a what do they call those things for, where you put metal inside there and you dip it down inside the heater deal. Doggone it.
I'll tell you
crucible,
what,
crucible.
If you want to disguise it, I'll bet it, put money on it, and give them odds.
Crucible. You put metal in there, I bet you could have melted metal with that thing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely could.
Which it crucibles are made out of carbon and ceramic materials, so make it out. You could probably, if you know what you're doing, you could probably literally run one of those to make a crucible. Don't let it completely burn down. Let it turn into the carbon itself, you know, and then compress it.
You could take some of that carbon from one burnt source. You could take some clay out of the side of the hill, build you a crucible, mix it with the clay with the carbon, heat treat it with the log, and then turn around and use it to melt metal in.
Yep. It would work.
Tell me that ain't cool.
You know, we've said this at least 150 times on this program. The technology is here. We're just not using it properly. That's all.
Well, I've seen some of the things that the Romans were doing back in the day. I've seen some of the things that the Egyptians were doing back in the day. I've seen things that the Native Americans were using, the things that the Amish were using, the things that... so many different cultures have been using for years. The Chinese, the Japanese, over there in England and France, and Germany, the innovations, the technology, the things, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And these folks, whenever they needed to get work done, they didn't want to have to do it the hard way every single time, so they made a tool to do it.
Yep.
And so, throughout our entire history, you know, without all the knuckleheads out there starting wars and craziness, we could have been so much further advanced if we could have got these folks together and encouraged them to keep on thinking the way that they were thinking and keep on making stuff. You know, there's a lot of cool toys back whenever I was a kid that, you know, you don't see anymore, but there were cool toys that had science and physics to them. You know, had something as simple as the cork gun. Those little cork guns were pretty powerful, man. You ever got shot in the eye with a cork?
Lord, yes. got hit the gun ass one time.
Yeah. So, you know, with everything that we've learned and all the technologies that are around and the fact that we can't, and people, I got to sit around and tell people that if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking for it because it's everywhere. I mean, the earth is what, 3/4 covered or more of water? You know, inside that water is salt in the ocean. Salt has its uses. You know, if you break salt down, one's like a toxic gas and the other one's like an explosive. So common table salt broke down is a potential energy source with toxic gas that could come out.
And, well, you know, the gas is toxic, but it's still usable.
Yeah, there's a use for everything. There ain't nothing under this sun that ain't.
You're talking about table salt, right?
Yeah.
Sodium chloride?
Yeah.
Chlorine gas is pretty toxic.
Yeah.
It's also a very powerful oxidizer, though, too.
There you go.
Right. In other words, it's got its uses. Used properly, it's a good thing.
So, you're eating table salt, man, and if you actually tried to eat it in its separate components, you wouldn't fare so well.
Really?
And water, you know, hey, you can smoke around water, but if water was in its separate elements, smoking probably wouldn't be a good idea. You know what I mean?
Not a good idea at all. Oh, Lord.
So, you got potential energy sources in everything under the sun. You got materials that are created every time you destroy a material. As far as the way it is set up, you know, they had a deal where they was actually showing by adding different frequencies to atoms, you could create different types of materials. So, what's the difference in what we're talking about, man? You see what I'm saying? In one range, it's a log. In another range, it's soap.
Yeah. Oh, I took, I had a tree trimming company came by and asked me if I wanted some, you know, they take the tree and throw it through a chipper, right?
Yes,
and
mulch.
Asked me if I wanted some wood chip. I said, by all you can bring me. They brought me about 4 truckloads. So I was using in my 55-gallon drum heater out in my shop, and I just threw a bunch of them in there and light up. Put a little fan there, just blow some air on it, and so help me, it got so hot, the drum turned wicked.
In that industry, there's a lot of ways to
actually see through that steel off that and see the jumping. I had to take air off because, like you said, it was about to melt the drum and release the fire into my shop.
Yeah.
You did, dude.
Well, in that industry you mentioned there, Raymond, there's a lot of companies out there. If you go find out where they dump this stuff, they'll have piles as tall as a 2 or 3 story building of that stuff.
They'll bring it to you for free if you ask them.
Yeah.
If you go closer than the dump, because they ain't just dump, they got to pay the dump to take it off their hands. Well, you're going to take it for free. They'll drive 5 or 6 miles out of their way to bring you the stuff.
If they had any common sense to the whole matter, they'd build them a portable wood gasifier and use that doggone waste material to run their generators while they're doing the grinding up the tree limbs.
Right, they could.
And whatever else they need the gas for. You know.
Right.
So, you know, it wouldn't even be beyond the realms of possibility for somebody to get tons of this stuff for free, put it through another grinding system, which basically brings it down to a fibrous material that you could then in turn press and glue together and make furniture out of, or fireplace logs.
Right. Well, you can make fireplace logs out of it without it. It's already chips if you put enough pressure on it.
Yeah.
Yes. Use some non-toxic when it burns type of glue, something similar to like Elmer's water-soluble wood glue, and it wouldn't take much glue because the pressure is what's going to hold it together.
Well, you could take one of the doggone their wood splitters, all right? They got a hydraulic ram on there, And you could actually build a contraption that would go right next to where the hydraulic ram is, to where you put all your wood chips inside a steel tube, and then you take that hydraulic ram and push it through there and compress all that stuff together, and then whenever it's done, force it out the other side in the shape of a log.
Right. Huh. It would work.
Yeah, it would.
Fantastic. It really would.
So, in my perfect world with my jobs plan, you wouldn't be wasting nothing, man. Nothing
really
would get wasted. Sand wouldn't get wasted. Glass wouldn't get wasted. Nothing. You know, everything would have a use. You'd know the chemistry of when you're burning your firewood, what's coming up out the chimney. You could use that material as well. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know. What we do with our, we use a lot of energy, but we waste probably, I would say at venture, at least 80 to 90% of the energy that we use. There's waste on the other side.
Like I said,
we're not using it efficiently.
The only way you can use energy is to release it.
Yeah.
But when you release it, catch it and use it again in its a changed form, I thought.
Sure. If you're burning water to make hydrogen, then capture the water, condense it back down, and
right,
there you go, man. You still got more fuel.
You know about taking those wood chips, turning them into fireplace logs. Just as chips. Burn them. Get heat from it. Boil water. Make steam to make electricity. But take the gases that come off that wood, cool it, and pump it through water and feed algae. Algae is 45% by weight of vegetable oil. And in warm climates, vegetable oil will burn straight and pure. You don't need to be making it into biodiesel. Just pure vegetable oil will run in a diesel engine. And so there, now all of a sudden you got fuel for your diesel car or your diesel electric generator or whatever you want it for.
And you got a fresh French fry smell out the other side. Who doesn't like the smell of French fries?
You tell them, brother.
I guess if you worked in a fast food joint long enough, you'd hate the smell of French fries.
I worked for about 2 weeks in a bakery one time, bread plant, and I was working with an air conditioning company, and we were putting in new ventilation systems for them. Trust me, I mean, it was years. Years afterwards, I could not stand to be down then from any bakery or anybody baking bread. I couldn't stand it. Let me turn my mic off.
Well, Stephen Gibbons posted a couple of videos in there using coils to increase voltage. So that was over there at the superchat.html. And thanks, Stephen. He's always putting really good information over there. So if y'all out there listening in and you didn't stop by yet to see the Mad Science chat over there on ShazizRadio.com, the superchat.html, you're missing out on a lot of good information if you're interested in alternative energy. And that goes on the Awake Radio site as well. If you haven't been over there to visit those folks, you're missing out on a lot of good information. And I'd encourage you to go over and check them out. Say hi to them, meet some new friends, and that kind of stuff. Well, we talk about here on Mad Science, you know, there's a wide range of stuff we talk about. There's energy capabilities out there. There's exotic materials out there. And with all these things together and understanding how they work, heck, Thomas sent me to a website called United Nuclear, where you can actually buy different things like titanium metal, potassium, I can't even pronounce that second portion of it, and calcium carbide, and ammonium, whatever the heck.
Thorium dioxide.
Thorium dioxide. That
so you don't have to purify your own and wonder if it's pure or not. You can get a pure sample and then test it out and see if it's actually going to do what you want it to do.
Yeah. I'm going to copy that link and throw it over in the chat room over there. But the key about that whole deal is it's out there, man. I was talking about how I saw a video where they was taking tungsten rods to get it out, and Thomas said, no, why waste time doing that whenever you can do it this way? You just go and buy it, you know, in a pure form and do your test. And, you know, we're not going to learn
anything. And it's cheap.
Yeah, it's cheaper that way. We're not going to learn anything without doing some little bit of trial and error kind of stuff. You know, I blew a lot of stuff up in my lab before I found out things that I wanted to keep and didn't want to keep.
Same here.
Yeah.
I can't
tell you how many times my wife ran up to my lab to see if I was all right, because she heard this big old boom when I discharged a 800 microfarad capacitor and it sounded like a shotgun going off.
You know, older teenager, I heard a rumor, and supposedly it was just a rumor, never happened, that some guy took some chemicals that he had made and went to Washington, D.C., got a couple of congressmen to ride with, and he took them to a service station, drained his gas tank, filled it with water, took out these white pills, looked like horse pills, dropped them, about five or six, seven of them, in his gas tank, and drove all the way around Washington, D.C. And then a couple of years later, I got out, graduated from high school, and went to work for a sheet metal company. And it dawned on me. It hit me point blank, straight in the head like a sledgehammer. I knew exactly what they had. It was calcium carbide. Because we had a calcium carbide generator sitting in the backyard of the sheet metal shop that you put the white crystals in, calcium carbide, and it makes acetylene gas. And a vehicle will run on acetylene gas. I know it does.
Now, see, that's cool, man.
I ran out of gas 3 miles from a service station in the country in North Carolina. I had my cutting torch in the back of the truck. I simply got the torch out, opened the hood of the truck, blew my air breather off my carburetor, turned it to about 3.5 PSI of the regulator, and put the thing in it, the torch, turned the gas on, and started the vehicle. And, of course, I couldn't regulate it, so I had to just put it in my drive and just let it just ease on down the road. And I drove about, 5, 6, 8 miles an hour for three miles. I didn't have to push the vehicle, didn't have to walk.
Okay.
It ran just pure air and acetylene gas.
See? That's brilliant.
But if anybody tries this out there, remember, under no condition do you hit that oxygen button. It will blow the head right off your vehicle.
Well, that's what one of the things about like hydrogen technology out there, you know, this one torch that they show on there, it's on demand. It doesn't store nothing. But if you ever want to see what hydrogen's capable of, go watch my hydrogen danger video. And these were just little balloons that we filled up with hydrogen and lit them up. All right, and then ones that me and Coltus did that showed where when you got flashback, it blew the container up. Well, you couldn't hear it on the doggone video because the noise, the percussion noise, was so incredibly loud that it sounded like a pew on the camera. But in reality, when you were standing there, it sounded like a cannon going off.
Yeah.
That's a lot of power, man.
No joke, it really is. And now, what about this? You had to have been a balloon, which was that they were under a little bit of pressure from the stretching of the balloon. But what if you put it in an automobile engine?
Well, there you go, man.
You're compressing them at 250, 300 PSI.
Well,
now, hydrogen and oxygen under a lot of pressure will self-ignite, just like diesel engine and diesel fuel in a diesel engine. There's no spark. You just compress it so tight, it self-ignites. And oxygen and hydrogen will do that, but not at 250, 300 PSI, which is what an automobile engine runs on. It won't do it.
Well, I tell you what, man. You drink explosive, inflammable gas every time you take a drink of glass of water.
Yes, you do.
And you eat toxic and explosive every time you put some salt in that water. But together, it makes your food taste good and washes down the big dry chunks so that you don't choke.
There you go.
So, This is all we're saying. Take everything that we already got, that we already have available to us, and let's build these doggone devices that everybody keeps saying they want. Alright, save the planet. Alright, put up or shut up, people. It's as simple as that. Put up or shut up.
There you go.
You know, look, the guys up there in the airplanes that are spraying crud in there, whether they're intentionally or unintentionally spraying crud in the air, they're still spraying crud in the air. What if you could run that same doggone turbine up there off of compressed air? You know, and electricity. All it needs is a force coming out the back. You know?
Yeah.
That's all it needs. So, what's to stop them from making a jet engine that runs off of compressed air and hydrogen and oxygen? So, all it does is when the plane flies over, you get rained on.
I like your idea of using an electric motor to turn a compressor to compress air. Then, using the heat from the compressor head and the heat of the air in the tank to make electricity through a Peltier device.
Yeah.
But use the pressure in the tank to raise the water 200 feet in the air. Now you have water 200 feet in the air. You've already made some electricity. Some, you've already got back a little bit of what you've used, but look at all the energy you've got stored up now. You've got cold air.
Yeah.
But up pressure to drive an air compressed, an air-driven motor. Now, when that air comes out, it's going to be super cold. Again, healthier devices.
I'm still trying to get the full-size version of the pop-pop boat or the putt-putt boat, whatever you want to call it, together. I need.
Scott, I've been working on that for about 3 years now.
I need a couple things. I need somebody that can bend me some tubing, whether it be stainless steel or whatever, to build a coil system that would actually fit a log in between there. Now.
I've got pipe bending tools that'll bend up to, they'll go down to half inch pipe, but they'll bend 2 inch pipe, 40, a scheduled 40.
Alright.
90-degree angle.
Could you bend me one with 12 turns on it?
Why not?
Well, that would be the motor for my pop-pop boat.
What diameter?
Oh, 2 inch. 2 inch diameter, 12 turns. Or two inch tubing, 12 turns, about,
inside or outside?
About the size of a small steering wheel. You know, like the hippies used to have on their hot rods back in the day?
I don't know if I could get it that tight.
About the size of a pressure pot.
Yeah.
I could probably bend it with about a 12 to 16 inch radius.
Well, that'll work.
Is all right, the stainless steel.
Yeah.
What are you using? What kind of pipe bending tool are you talking about using, Raymond?
Oh, wait a minute.
Right. Three of them already made.
Yes, you do. I can't keep
one of them.
Yes, Buddy's got one. It's got, Buddy, about 24 turns in it?
Well, it's close to 12, I do believe.
Yeah, it's a coil. It's about 10 inches in diameter.
Well, that's what I need.
It is stainless steel.
Well, get me one of those, and I'll put it in a boat, and I'll show you how to use that doggone thing to get that boat around using the log.
Burn it up, melt it, do what you want with it. It's yours.
Well, as soon as it gets here, I'm putting it in a boat. Even if I have to build the boat out of freaking plywood and whatever.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
You're donating the coil. I'll donate the money it takes to send it to him.
Wonderful.
That coil will fit in one of those, if it fits, it ships from priority mailboxes. I'll pay for it.
Cool.
You donate the coil, I'll donate the money to send it. She's is. How's that?
Sounds
like we just went from we can do this if only we can get ourselves together to we got ourselves together.
Yes, we do.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, hey, Sugar, do you have a boat to put it in?
Man, I tell you what, if I can't find a boat, I will build a boat.
Sugar, I've got a 10-foot aluminum John boat.
Flat bottom?
Yeah, flat bottom.
That'll work.
one of those bass boat, buster boats.
Them suckers are light. One person pick them up and go.
That would work perfect. A little 10-foot flat bottom John boat. Yep, that would work perfect. Cause all I got to do is cut some holes down in that thing and run the tubing up underneath it and make my swivels for the to nozzle it in whichever direction I want to go, and I'll be able to steer that thing and run it off of firewood.
You know, you don't even have to cut holes in the boat. You can put your pop-pop motor in the center of the boat and take the pipe and run over the sides and then down into the water. Right? Just as good.
Well,
just
I suppose that'd be all right, but what if that thing gets hot and you touch it?
Why does your arm get hot? Get burnt.
Put your hand on it and you can steer it from there.
You give me the coil and I'll engineer it. That's all I'm saying.
All we need is a swivel on the end of the piece that goes in the water.
Well, that's a good idea. I could actually make like like the old outboard motor style kind of deal. It doesn't matter as long as it can get down into the water to do the pressure.
You're right. In fact, you could build a motor and have it on a platform outside the boat at the back.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I think it would be really cool.
Your body, you can move your body forward or backward in the boat to counterbalance and get everything leveled out.
Yep.
Put your steering wheel in it. Put your swivel on the motor, on the propulsion part of the motor down in the water, and you can turn it. Put a little tiny little keel on the boat so you can go straight, except when you turn.
And then... Perfect. With the outboard motor style, you could actually have a lift that if it got too hot or whatever, you needed to put the fire out so you could park, you could just lower the lever and dip it in the water and put the fire out.
Wait a minute. That's not right with finesse. You have a hand-operated bilge pump with the exhaust port of it going to your fire. And all you do is just pump it one time. And it'll pour enough water in there to put your fire out.
Well, there you go.
You don't want to plug it.
That pop-pop engine's so light, it'd be easy to just touch. Yes.
And the thing is, you don't want to flood it and put your fire out. Because if you just put the fire out, the water, as it turns to steam, will cool the motor down faster so you can relight it later.
Cool.
Hey, fantastic. I think together, we can work this thing out and make it super neat, man.
Well, whenever I'm driving around in a solid-state boat that we all three put together, I tell you what, we got to have to throw a bash or something to celebrate.
You got it, Bill.
Because when I did that pop-pop boat contest, and we didn't get not one single entry in that entire pop-pop boat contest. People, I guess, didn't take it serious or whatever. But
somebody else decided to raise hell and destroy things and people's... Yeah, anyway.
At that time, we had some pretty good prizes for the deal, but nobody entered, so it just went kind of by the wayside. So when I get that prize...
Organized through boat.
Well...
That's what happened.
Yeah, but see, look, when I get this boat together and I can actually ride around in it, do a video on it, I'll resurrect a pop-pop boat contest and see if anybody out there can top what it is that we did.
That's what beat us.
Once you do that, I'll be your competition. I still have what I have in mind, and I'll still play.
Cool.
I had a boy years ago.
This is going to be cool.
Well, how much do you weigh, buddy?
245 pounds.
Well, I weigh 150 pounds. I got an advantage on you. I'm like the little tiny jockey on the horse.
I weigh 180, so I'm out.
That's all right. I'll be a little more streamlined.
Oh, hey, how much does your daughter weigh? She said,
I'm not sure. Probably 98 pounds. I don't know.
Probably soaking wet with the winter clothes on.
Well, either way.
We might get things to move like a jet.
My son weighs about 100 pounds. I'll put him in.
All right, see, we're already trying to figure out ways to cheat. It's got to be Muddy in his boat and me in my boat for it to be a race, man.
Yeah, I'm going to make mine out of pop bottles.
We got to get Thomas in a boat, too.
Yep.
All four of us.
Two pontoons out of 2-liter bottles.
Yeah. All right. Well, either way, you know, there's a lot of I can't wait to get that started. But there's a lot of different things out there, man. With this same deal, as simple as this idea, the little pop boat, there was wasted heat coming out of the top of that boat that could have been used for thermoelectrics. You know, and you could actually put those Peltier elements that we were talking about, one on the side of the boat and the other one near the doggone heater that's actually running the boat, and the temperature difference from the cool water and the hot side on the other would actually produce electricity that you could use to run some lights to let people know which direction your boat's going, north or south or east or west. What is
it? It didn't go to a DC motor with a prop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty brilliant idea, though. You know, electrical assist. That's Buddy's going to cheat now.
You take that John boat and you lie in the bottom of Peltier's and set the thing on fire, she'll haul.
Yeah.
Shut that holy water on one side.
Don't you just love it when a plan comes together?
Yeah. I'll be cruising along, and I'll be like a boat linked ahead of Muddy, and then he'll like, oh, well, he thinks he's got me. I got my secret weapon under here, and he holds the electric button on that Peltier element device and blow right by me.
There's no way you can be a whole boat length ahead of me. You have to stay with your boat.
All right.
Huh?
Which one of you guys actually have Peltier devices?
I don't, so Raymond's going to have them.
I've got 336 of them.
So Raymond's going to have a supercharged... Raymond's going to have a supercharged hybrid pop-pop boat / electrical jet.
You got it, Pilgrim.
Hey, and there's another thing, too. Why turn a propeller whenever you can take a pump and make a jet motor?
Right, exactly.
So there you go, man. I took, a long time ago, I made an electric boat just like that. I took a little windshield washer pump, two little windshield washer pumps, 12 volt, and put them in the boat, the bottom of a plastic boat, and one portion lets the water in, and then the other one squirts the water out. And you could actually use a remote control from an old RC car to turn on whichever pump you wanted at the time, and you would turn left and right while you were driving your boat around. It was simple. It was brilliant.
Right. You know, I've got two trash pumps that I've never used. In fact, I've never even opened the box on them. These suckers will pump 1,600 gallons of water a minute each.
So how many solar panels would it take to put one of those in your boat and charge a battery to run those two pumps off of a small inverter or something?
Well, let's see. I've got about 600 solar panels that put out 250 watts each. And I've got an 28-foot pontoon boat. I figured up, I think I can get roughly 15 of them on that pontoon boat.
Well, make sure that it's not top heavy.
A boat is the best idea that you come up with, better than a car, because with a boat, weight is ballast.
Yeah.
That's all weight is, it's ballast. So if I get too much weight too high, all I do is just add more weight underneath. You remember Shazelle, you know that.
Weight forces it to push down in the water, and the more into the water you are, the more drag you create, too.
But the more energy you can generate because you can put on more solar panels.
Right.
And weight, if you weight, you don't just put weight. You build your weight with your pop-pop boat engine.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of these deals, man, whether it be a car or an airplane or whatever, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You just make the wheel work better. You know, precision bearings.
I'm still thinking that pop-pop boat could be improved on if you used instead of having the intakes and the outtake on the same side of the boat, you have the coil running from the front through the coil, or the pipe running from the front through the coil and out the back, and the front end is a slightly bigger intake, and then there's a Tesla diode in between there, so whenever it heats up, it can't push back through the diode, so it pushes out the back end of it when it gets done pushing out into the back end, it decreases the amount of temperature because it just expanded, and that causes suction, which it pulls in from the Tesla diode end. And if you put a Tesla diode on the back end, but then it can't suck water back in the back, it only comes in the front, shoots out the back.
I see exactly where you're going, and I had the same idea about 2 years ago. One buddy and I were talking about the contest with the pop-up boat. I had that same idea. That is brilliant. Yes,
it's either that or even if you don't want to use a piece of Tesla technology, you can use something like this.
Just a check valve is all it is.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just a check valve.
Well, the Tesla diode's not a check valve because it's never closed. It's redirecting the flow of the water so that basically the water creates its own resistance. If you go one way, the other way, there's next to no resistance because it can freely flow.
Okay.
It's a series of fins that face one. They're basically facing one direction, like this, right?
Right.
Bring all in one direction, like V's.
Okay.
And the middle is open.
Right.
So if the water flows back the other direction, it hits the fins and splits off, and then it creates eddy currents that push back the other direction, keeping the water from coming through.
Now, Shazuz, you do require the pop-up to work. The popping of the motor is not conducive to the motor itself. It's not necessary. It doesn't have to make any noise. It still works.
Its own turbulence created by the little side channels.
Yes.
Its own resistance.
Right. If you go the right direction, it doesn't create any of those eddy currents because they deflect off of that that V down to the center of it and out the middle.
And no moving parts.
No moving parts. That's right. Other than the whatever's moving through it.
Well, I like it. I like it. And you can put a paddle wheel on the side of it with a little static generator and style your hair while you're driving through the water.
Speak to yourself for people who need to style their hair.
Just use grease.
Hey, my hair is going to be the new style. I'm going to start a trend. Everyone's going to want mad science hair. Including the women. Especially the women.
Especially the women.
How many polyurethane points are you going to make?
On my hair?
Yeah.
No, you just got to let that stuff flow free, naturally, man, like static in the wind.
Like static in the wind, huh?
Yeah.
A Wolverine haircut, man.
I'll tell you what, ladies, let me do your hair for you, and you go around, and you'll be the talk of the town.
Hey, I a hairdresser. In fact, I built her shop for her that she owns. And her hair, she every day, it looks just like yours in your picture on Skype.
Huh.
And she thinks that's a style. She did her teenage son's hair that way. He went to school. They actually expelled him from school because of his hair stuff. Dude, boy, she hit the ceiling. She went in there, and I mean, she gave all of them what for. Actually took them up before the school board, everything. I'm a hairdresser, and this is a style, and a lot of people like it.
I'd hit the ceiling too, man, because like they just can't. That's the only reason why they kicked him out of school, because they can't stand brilliance. You know?
Exactly.
A hairstyle, tell if you want to see somebody who's a genius, look at my hair, man.
I kind of like that dude on Scam School. He's got hair like Bart Simpson.
Yeah. Hey, don't be a hater. I heard you laughing, Thomas.
I'll get my Bart Simpson and I'll look back at your pop-pop boat and I'll say, keep my shorts.
There you go. Before I wash them.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. And you have to figure out a name for your boat. Everybody's got a name for their boat, you know, because when you're on the water, you got to have a name for your boat. I don't know what I'm going to name mine yet.
I'm torn between Hazel and Alice.
Does boat have to be named a lady's name?
No, not necessarily.
Not if you're French.
It comes from the old seafaring days when they used to have the woman's carving on the bow of the ship.
I'm gonna name mine the USS Passing Muddy. What do you think?
A dig, huh?
Yeah. Might be like looking at me. You'd be out there trying to put the oars out there so they catch up.
All right. Okay. You guys did it. You just did it. Okay. Mine, the raspberry. That's what I'm going to do when I pass both of you.
Throw raspberries at us?
Are you joining in there now?
Well, Thomas needs a boat too.
Hey.
Nah, he might get his top hat wet.
My top hat's made of leather, dude. It's fine.
Well, you better watch it because of the wind.
I see your top hat getting wet, your $300 worth of freaking leather, and it's going to bend over like the Cat in the Hat.
Hey, yeah, Thomas.
Put his out on his head, so squeeze it out, put all his brains out his nose.
Thomas.
Oh.
When you pass Muddy in your pop-pop boat built like a kayak, driving by with your top hat and the wind blows your top half off, you're going to have to watch out because Muddy will slap it with his boat oar while he's trying to catch up. I'm just saying.
I'm going to pick it up and beat it in the fire.
Hey.
Then we'll have to put cannons on our pop-pop boat for the war.
I'll use it to bail my boat.
How rude.
Man. Hey, it's about a gallon and a half, man.
Well, I guess that would work. Oh, yeah. This ought to be a hoot, man. Come on, let's get this thing up. Put it in the mail. Let's get it started. Let's get the boats going on. And we'll make some videos of it, share it with everybody, and move on from there. The reason why I keep on about this stupid pop-pop boat, because I see a benefit for people around the world. Now, you can imagine, most of these places out there that got old internal combustion engines, some of the motors that are on some of these boats in different countries that they classify as third world countries, these boat motors are like way back in maybe the 50s or the 60s, and finding parts for them is like next to impossible. And probably expensive as all get out. Now imagine a solid state boat motor that you didn't have to replace any moving parts with exception of maybe a hinge for nozzling or whatever, you know. But for the most part, the entire motor, it's a solid state steam engine built with a coil system that pushes this boat to and fro, and you know, can be reused over and over again without no gasoline or anything like that. You can just use dried up firewood that you find on the side of the water or whatever. If you need fuel, just pull over to the side and grab you some sticks and throw it in there. See what I mean?
Dumpster.
Yeah. Burn your trash and drive your boat. But either way, now you got a boat that everybody could afford, and it has no serious maintenance to it that you can get around and do your fishing. You know, even if it's slower and all get up, like a trolling motor, you know, you don't go very fast with a trolling motor, but you can get from point A to point B with one.
Yep.
And ain't that all they want to do? I mean, as far as making a sporting deal out of it, heck, you take that same doggone design with the coil system like we're talking about, and instead of having a wide open nozzle all the way through the pipe, put a whole bunch of tiny pipes inside there and make multiple ports coming out of there.
Yeah.
Now, you increase the pressure. And just like what Stephen Gibbons was pointing out there about using coils to increase voltage, you'll use these coils to increase the water pressure from the heat trying to get out of that doggone thing. You see what I mean?
Yep.
And then
I'm going to spray training fluid for my fuel. It's going to be injected.
Well,
spray.
There you go, man.
That's some hot fire there.
And what do you think you could do with dried out moss?
Plant.
Yeah, a lot of that down in Louisiana and Florida.
Dried out moss will burn too. There's all kinds of there's fuel everywhere.
Everywhere.
Alright, now you throw a little tiny solar panel on that doggone thing. And put a little electrolysis going on there. You Of course, you're not going to produce a massive amount of hydrogen, but you don't need a massive amount of hydrogen. Just a tiny bit being introduced into that system and ignited to heat that doggone thing up just a little bit more, and all you did was use the sun for like a turbocharger.
Right.
So, you know, hey, there you go, man. You build a pipe right above the coil, and you actually have a hydrogen implosion every so often inside that tube will force pressure down that tube and out the back, because that energy's got to go somewhere. Right? And so, if you got a system set up to where, let's say you got a water wheel on the side of your boat that's turning a little static generator, and that's going to be like for your spark plug that goes inside this tube, which on the other side you have a solar panel that is causing the electrolysis to mix make hydrogen and oxygen. Soon as that little tube is filled up and that static charge zaps across inside that spark plug and ignites that hydrogen and forces that pressure down that doggone tube, you see what I mean? You're only limited by your imagination, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, obviously, we're limited by our resources, but it's all there, you know. I want to see another version of Junkyard Wars, where you send people like us down into a doggone junkyard that has everything, old appliances and whatever. Give us so much time to go in there and come out with something useful. See what I mean? Something useful, something unique.
Yep.
I tell you what, we'll come out there with all kinds of stuff. That's, man.
I'll do like Einstein did. I'll get me a doggone Tesla coil from Ryan Abrams. Tell him to hop it up really good, and we'll try to time travel with the thing. And we'll call it the Corona.
Cool. I'm in.
One pop will get me a mile.
Well, either way, man, we've just on this show alone, and I've said this before, go back and listen to all the old podcasts. If you can't find some sort of idea, at the very least, out of them podcasts, you're just not listening. And if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough, because you're surrounded by it. Everything around you has energy potential. It doesn't matter what it is or what it's made of. You know? Even glass has energy potential. You know, what kind of temperatures does molten glass have? And how long will it retain that heat? Anybody?
Now, you go trying to put water across it, and you're going to shatter it.
Yeah, and what happens whenever you put water on something and something shatters?
Oh, very small.
Well, you know what? There used to be a deal back a long time ago where whenever they wanted to move a big giant boulder and they just couldn't move it, they'd build a giant fire around that boulder.
Uh-huh.
And then they'd go up to the top of the hill where they found a stream, and they would drain cold water down there, and as soon as that doggone rock got red hot, they'd dump some cold water on there and shatter that thing into a bunch of little tiny rocks that they then in turn take those rocks away and build houses or bridges or whatever walls out of.
That is exactly what they used to do. Exactly.
I wonder if they ever used that concept with the same process the Egyptians were using, where they drill holes into the rock and pour water in it and let it freeze.
Yeah.
But the hole placement would cause it to break exactly the shape they wanted. So you heat that rock up until it's red, until you get it as hot as you can with holes drilled in it, come along with water and pour it in the holes to get it to crack and break.
You know, in the mining industry, they've been using an uncontrolled but controlled explosion to move sections of the wall out of the way just by strategically placing the holes where they want them. They could pretty much calculate down to the general vicinity of how much material they were actually going to break free from certain things.
Yep.
You see what I mean?
Yes, I do, y'all.
That falls right in there to what you're saying with the ice there, Thomas. Man, you want to crack a foundation, drill a hole in it, put some water in it, and let the winter time come along. You'll do it.
That would bury it up. Carved mountain passes that way.
That's understanding nature, man. That's understanding the laws of physics. And understanding the laws of physics means when you don't want to enact the law of physics, you don't. You see what I mean?
Yep.
We can get around Lenz's law by never even enacting Lenz's law. You know? And people don't understand exactly how that functions. When you create a field on one side, you know, and you allow the electron flow to come back into that same deal, you're going to create a field on the opposite side. So don't do that. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, doctor, it hurts when I do that. Yes. Well, then don't do that.
Yeah. Put your finger on it, and then it's hot, and it hurts. Don't move
your finger.
What's Thomas? Thomas, say your famous one.
He's not here now.
Where you at, Thomas?
I got myself muted. I'm grabbing something real quick.
Right,
so I don't have a famous one. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
ain't Thomas.
Don't look into the laser.
That's not mine. That's somebody else's.
Oh, well, don't look into the laser with the remaining eye.
Yeah.
You're probably thinking about Sir Thorai. Who?
Sir Thorai.
Who's that?
Brian Abrams. He got that lightning bolt to his eye.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He took a lightning bolt to the eye, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Man, that had to hurt.
Yeah.
Actually, that one you mentioned, I got that actually from a website that shows you how to make your own CO2 laser.
Oh, cool. Well, I like it. Stephen Gibbons said you can also put dry sticks in the cracks of the rocks and the wet the sticks. The expansion of the sticks crack the rock. Cool.
Right. The exact opposite of drying out a piece of leather.
That's right. Leather. That's how they used to put leather on things really tight. Was they put it on there kind of as tight as they could get it, and then they'd wet it, and when it dried out, it contract.
Yep. Would shrink up.
Yep. It's brilliant, man.
Yep.
So, you know, there you go, folks. If you ain't got no ideas after listening to this talk, then, man, I don't know what to say. If we can get other people out there doing the same exact thing that we're doing, and actually, like what Raymond pointed out earlier, and Thomas and Muddy, about... you know, what we started off talking about getting something done, and we actually got something moving there towards this one specific project. This is how things, you know, happen. That's what Shaziz Radio and all this has been about. Get people motivated, build stuff, create, throw some ideas on the table. You know, there's a group out there called the Geek Group, and they put together a giant building where they actually get in there and run experiments and build stuff and do YouTube videos together. There should be a Geek Group on every doggone corner in every community out there, where you bring the most brilliant individuals from your own community and even invite them in from other places to, you know, work on projects together. Not only would it be fun, but, you know, socially you could meet new friends that way, and it'd just be a, you know, a really good deal. And as far as business-wise, heck, man, if you got junk out there in your backyard and you need to get rid of it, you could either take it over there and barter with somebody for something that you do need, or sell it for, or scrap, or whatever. It would unlock the recycling industry unlike anything you've ever imagined. You know, you got materials that you got tons of and you need to get rid of it. There's somebody out there that could use it. Reground up plastic bottles that could be melted into bricks or blocks or Legos or something. Yeah, any ideas, guys? Yeah, just left me hanging out there in the wind. Tell you what.
Lumped Legos.
I had to threw you under the bus after you threw us under the bus so many times.
Oh, cool. Hey, you know, there's a whole lot of going under the bus around this crew.
I'm moving on to a project for my wife right now. I'll give you another minute or two.
All right. Well, you have fun. No, I'm just got a common cold. I don't know. Maybe it's not so common cold. Summertime cold or whatever, because this crazy climate change / global warming. It's hot one day, it's cold the next. Crazy stuff. Anyway.
Did you just admit there's climate change?
I got climate changes in my room all the time. Like last night, I had the heater on. It got hot, so I had to shut the heater off. It got cold, so I got turned the heat on. It got hot. Back and forth.
Oh, I've been doing that.
It was disruptive. Huh?
What you need is an electric blanket, that way you don't have to get up and turn the heat on and off.
I got an electric blanket, but I can't stay under the doggone thing too long because I start feeling like a fried egg.
There is a low setting on those things.
Yeah, you're supposed to have a thermostat on those things.
Oh. Maybe that's the deal. I'm cooking my biscuits while I'm trying to sleep.
Chemtrail flu.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they chemtrail flu. Thanks, Steven. That's probably what it is, man. You know, hey, they say that they don't do geoengineering, then they come around and say that they do geoengineering. So you can't even believe what they say because they keep changing the story. They keep changing the name of it. Climate change, climate disruption, global warming, hole in the ozone layer. Whatever it's going to be next week, whatever the weather is, that's what they call it. Well, when I was shoveling 20 inches of
snow. Are you saying there's a hole somewhere that's blowing some hot air from somewhere?
Yeah. I was shoveling 20 inches of global warming off of my doggone driveway. It made me so mad I had to do a video about it. And then I did a how to properly panic during global warming. You know, to show people if you're in that jam. Yeah. If you're in that jam and you need to know how to properly panic, go watch how to properly panic during global warming. That will show you everything. That will give you the safety tips necessary to not go insane when they tell you it's hot outside and it's not. Okay? Come on, man. Did I get thrown under the bus again?
We can't help it when we see the tires coming.
Hey, look, there's the tire. Look, Shelby, tip him off balance. All right. Well.
Sorry about that, fellas. I took care of business.
No, that's all right. Oh, got to apologize a little bit.
Steven said it was 10 degrees here yesterday, and we got hailstones. And number SRM, number geoengineering. Yeah.
2 weeks ago I came on the show and I could barely breathe and had a hard time breathing. I listened to the show and I found out I'm pretty grumpy. I apologize.
Grumpy?
Yeah, I was grumpy. Oh no, not
hey,
much.
Julia.
Even when you're grumpy you sound funny.
I got an idea for a contest.
What's that? I'm leading
the contest up to you and Muddy. But whoever wins the contest, the first place winner will get 1,200 watts of solar panels. All they got to do is pay for the shipping. They're free. That's okay. The first place. Second place will get 500 to 600 watts of solar panels free. Now, you want to be money to come up with what kind of a contest for the judge.
The Bitcoin they were going to give back then, too.
Well, I can think of a whole lot of things that have a contest on. One of them be like a junkyard style wars where people go to their local junkyard and build something. I don't care what it is. Build a compressed air car, electric fan, or something.
These solar panels I'm talking about, she says, are exactly the same things that I gave you. They've been damaged by hail, but they still work.
Oh, yeah, those ones have been laying out there in the ground, plugged into the battery since you brought them out, and they're still putting out power. And they've been through rain, they've been through snow, and they've been stepped on, cats walked on them, and probably even did their business or whatever, and they're still working. Right. So I left them out there with the Freethinkers video to prove a point. Even when you think something's trash, it still has a use. Man, hell yeah. I tell you what, that thing, go back and look at my Freethinker video series, and I'm not done with it yet, but
look at the date. I'll take you on my...
Look at the date on that first three Freethinker video.
Right.
And those lights have been on that long. You couldn't leave the dome light in your car on that long without running your battery down.
So they are putting out.
They're still going.
From, you got videos of them, right?
Yeah. And there's more videos on the way. But yeah. I put the Freethinkers video together, and there's a good outcome for the whole finality of it. But the point that I'm trying to prove right now is that I put these in the worst possible place for wind, the worst possible place for solar. I mean, if you look, and I ain't gonna give it away, but look at the very first video, look at the last video, the updated video, and any videos coming out prior, and tell me what has changed in that entire deal and what you've noticed. Because there's some pretty cool stuff going on in that deal, and it's been running all this time in the worst possible way. There's, like I said, it's been rained on, it's been snowed on. I got things in the way of things where they shouldn't be in the way. I got propellers that are wobbly, nothing is straight. It's all made out of trash, and yet all this time, it's still producing electricity. Imagine that.
Yeah, you look like you had a pretty good museum of out there.
Yep. Now think about this. Take what you've seen so far and modify it to precision. Now if it can do that good with junk, imagine if it had brand new deep cycle batteries, brand new capacitors, perfectly balanced blades, perfectly balanced bearings, and a stable stand to hold the wind turbines on, and I could go on and on. Some mathematics done where everything was precise, and do the math then. You know, start off doing the math with what it's got, and tell me where all the inefficiencies are, and then start adding on positives such as a perfectly balanced wind blade, and then redo the math. By the time you get done doing the math and the math of how long it's actually been functioning under the circumstances which it has so far, with precision at that, you tell me. I guarantee you, if you take the time to figure it out, you're going to like it. That's all I can say about that. So
I have right now over 50,000 watts of solar panels.
Well, there you go, man.
I'm going to donate 1,500 to 1,600 watts of solar panels to our contest. There's only going to be two winners. First winner, you get 1,200 watts of solar panels. Second place gets 500 to 600. Decide what the contest will be.
All right, we'll get on that. Now, we're getting down to the wire, so I want to give everybody a chance for a last thought, but what I want to point out before that is that you throw nature off balance and you try to hold it as long as you can, it takes quite a bit of energy, such as like creating an electromagnet. When you put that energy to it, it's a lot of work to hold that doggone thing there. But the moment you can't hold it anymore, nature slaps it back down into balance, that energy coming back, do the math. Measure it out. Nature don't play around. And if you know that nature's going to do this with everything, you know, you throw a bucket of water up in the air, it took you quite a bit of force to get that water up in the air, but just imagine the force when that water comes back down and slaps you in the face. See what I mean?
Right.
All right, well, that's pretty much it. You guys got any, anything? Nothing? Any? exotic materials, websites, or YouTubes, or...
I'm curious what you...
Yeah, if you went on the pop-pop mode, I'm going to get you some hairspray.
So that my hair don't, like, go vertical or horizontal or something like that? Horizontal?
Yeah. Hey, why don't we hook you solar panels to the pop-pop mode contest?
That could be interesting.
That'd be pretty cool. Turn off the pop-pop mode.
First place winner is who can
build the solar
fastest. The second place is who can build the most exotic.
Well, I'm already going to get the fastest. That's it.
Well, so, do you have to make all the stuff yourself though to be a part of this?
No.
See, that's what I'm thinking.
No, it's a combined joint effort.
So it's about the design. It's your design, yeah. not your handiwork.
Yeah.
Somebody else can do the handiwork, but you have to design the entire thing.
If it was up to handiwork, money would win.
If you need a special part and you need a machinist to make it for you, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I'm just making sure what the rules are. Maybe we should put like a little list of what the rules actually are, you know?
We can do that. But if it was up to handiwork, Muddy would win because he's a better skilled craftsman than I am. But
Muddy can come up with some wild stuff that works, man. I'm telling you, he's something else.
Oh, I tell you what, she says. Yeah, I put me a shower out here down at the pallet shed for giggles. And I was sitting there thinking about, doggone, I got to heat this water. It is cold. And there's too much shade down here. By the time the hose gets down here, it's not hot. So I took my bucket and I just took a whole coffee maker, dunked it in the water, and plugged it in. It only took like 20 minutes to get above temperature what you want hitting it.
Cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, and I just took the coffee maker out of the water.
So, essentially what you're saying is you used one of my ideas to heat your water?
Yeah, I didn't want to take the coffee maker apart. All I knew was I wanted to submerge the element. Let the water flow through it, too. So, yeah, it worked pretty cool.
Cool.
Heated that water up pretty quick.
Well, there you go, man. All right, well, that's it, guys. Been a brilliant conversation. But when I'm passing Muddy and he's trying to spray that hairspray in my hair to keep it horizontal.
That won't be hairspray. That'll be steam, brother.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy, listen to
me. I saw you flying by him as he's spraying the hairspray out into the air. And by the time the race is all done, you look like Linus after Lucy's been yelling at him.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, fellas. I want third place in this contest. Third place gets 20 healthier devices, 12 volt.
Cool. Used.
Well, fourth place, they get 50, what do you call them? Piezo crystals.
Cool.
Pickup crystals. All right, so we got four places. We got four deals.
All right, yes. Make sure somebody writes that down so we can notate it in the rules and in the deal section there.
And I don't see any reason why we should disqualify anybody if they work in a team. Two, three, four people. What we're trying to do...
They just have to figure out how to split the prize up.
Yeah.
You get up, actually do something.
The point of the contest is to bring ideas on, put them in reality and give them a test, see how they work out.
That's
yeah.
the whole point of the contest.
Which means that the system for these boats really should be designed separate from the boat, and you should use the same boat for each device and check the speed on it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, whatever.
That way you know it's all the other. It's kind of like you don't weigh to see how much material you've got by putting something in a cup and sitting on the scales. You got to set the cup on the scales first while it's empty and weigh it to see how much it weighs. Then add the stuff and re-weigh to see how much material in the cup weighs.
Yeah, we can work all that technical stuff out later. But one thing is, I'm gonna need you guys to help me promote this thing. Well, I have to do a combined video. Maybe Muddy can make a video and ship it over to me, or Raymond can make one. We can all combine these video together, and then the finished product, we can upload to each one of our YouTubes and let everybody know about the contest. What do you think?
Yes.
Great, Muddy. I approve this message.
Yeah.
I really and truly don't know. I need your brains to think about this. How could anybody cheat in this? How could anybody cheat? Because what we're wanting to do is get people out there to actually do something, design something, work on it, and get...
Well, hold on. The cheating method would be to use something other than pop-pop boat tech, technology on it, like using the Peltiers and whatnot.
Yeah.
Those would be a completely separate category. Because you're trying to test each type of technology and get the best design from each one. Then we can try combining them together to see which combination comes out to be the best combination.
Yeah, and we could have a cheater's award, too, if somebody gets caught cheating.
Yeah, let's stick a fish hook in the water and have a fish pull me.
All right, well, we got to go, guys. We're running over, so it's been brilliant. You've been listening to Mad Science, www.shazizradio.com, Awake Radio, People to People Radio, and multiple others. So with that said, trying to ramble as fast as I can so I can get out of here. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned tomorrow for the Night to the Roundtable. Take care. Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.